Rob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Feel like Tuesday to you, but it certainly feels like Monday to me. First day back, sort of, after the weeks of the PRISM West Virginia American History Summer Academy. I'm Bob. Glad to have you along. Glad to be here. Hey, where were you last night, Bob? Well, let me explain it to you. Once a year, the last remaining member of my family, the one I grew up with, not the one that I have now, the last remaining member of my family, my sister, comes up to visit and drives all the way from the Gulf Coast of Alabama. And we get to visit for an all-too-short period of time. And then, they go back home. I wish that it was longer. I wish that, I just wish we had longer together. But at any rate, they arrived on Sunday. And yesterday we spent the day pigging out on delightful shrimp. Had a big shrimp boil along with red potatoes and new corn, fresh corn. Yummy. Still noshing on it. Today it was, and this is one of those unpaid advertisements for which I am so justifiably non-famous. Today it was Kaneka brand sausage on hoagie rolls with sautéed onions and sweet peppers. Holy mackerel. Oddly enough, you can find Kaneka in a lot of, that's C-O-N-E-C-U-H, Kaneka. It's an old Indian word meaning river of death. Never mind. You can find Kaneka in grocery stores everywhere, lots of states on the eastern seaboard and middle Atlantic and deep south, except West Virginia. I live in a Kaneka-free zone, which is a real problem for me because, daggum, it's delicious. You can look them up on the web. You can order them order it by mail. There is nothing, I repeat, nothing like it. Absolutely delicious. So I'm running a little slow. I generally try not to eat heavy meals before going on the air because it makes me a little. But there was no resisting it today, and it was yummy. If you follow my tweets, you may have seen yesterday's shrimp, which was like candy. So that's where I was yesterday. And in fact, they're in the living room now, talking and conversing and such. But having been gone for 3 weeks from the microphone, broadcasting the PRISM series, I really wanted to get back to some semblance of normalcy with our conversation. Because it's not just y'all tuning in, it's me tuning in. This does as much for me as it does, and I don't know what it does for you, but I am grateful for the fact that you do like what you hear and that this is something special for you. It does a great deal for me. Because, when I talk about news stories and stuff in there, with the family, I get the look. You know the look. You've got somebody in your family, probably you give the look to that, oh, he's doing it again. Oh, you know, that look. And so it works much better within this context. Trust me when I say so. Please. So, yeah, I've missed y'all as well. I don't know if the bills do on our chat room or what, but it's kind of nobody's a moderator and everything's kind of squirrely. It might be the bills do. I'll have to look into that. Of course, if the bills do, we're in kind of tough shape. Yeah, okay, Bob, go ahead and mention that. June and July, because of my absences, have been really, really lean. And as a consequence, any of you who can or might hit the PayPal button or the snail mail address, makes no difference to me, any time in the near future would be great. We're looking, well, it's the middle of July. We've got mid-month bills to pay, and we're about, $900 in the hole for the middle of the month. Just are. I mean, that's how this works. So any of you, you know, but that's only 90 people doing $10 a piece at the PayPal button. It's not that out of reach. And it would be really helpful. You know, I wish I could come and, you know, walk down the street in your parade or whatever. Well, hell, I'll do that for $900. But it's what it takes to keep this thing, these things going. And I wanted to share an email with you before we get into the meat of tonight's content. I got this wonderful email from Yvonne in Miami yesterday. And it's a brilliant idea, and I'd love to figure out a way to make it happen. First of all, Yvonne addresses me as Mr. Kincaid. We're all just folks around here, Yvonne. Bob will do nicely. He apologizes right off the bat. First, I want to say thank you for your... he says, excuse me if my English seems a bit broken. Well, Yvonne, if your English is broken, my English is in a million tiny pieces. I butcher the language every night. But he says, first, I want to say thank you for your show. Thank you, Yvonne, for listening and sharing your time. Yours is the far greater expenditure, trust me. But Yvonne continues, so we, your listeners, and the broader left want to reduce the poisoning of human beings from the use of fossil energy. Yes, that would be nice. Yvonne says, I think that is great. I think it is important to talk about it, and I try to sneak in conversations at work. Isn't it sad that I have to sneak the conversations in at work? Sadder still is the blank, I don't care, and it's been and will be the same looks that I get. So I have many ideas regarding solar and its implementation. Among those ideas, I have one that I would like you to try. Nay, I am ordering you to do this as a listener intervention. Oh, I like sentences that begin with nay. It's so Shakespearean. Just funnin'. Thank you, Yvonne. Nay, I am ordering you to do this as a listener intervention. I say ordering half-joking because only you seem as... a very humble guy in the way you ask for donations. Oh, believe me, I'm humble with a lot to be humble about. So I said, talk is great, but it's time to do something concrete. It is time for the left to get Bob Kincaid, the left's no fossil fuel advocate, off the power grid. Something I'm sure you've been looking into. And I have. Wind and solar. It's doable. It's eminently doable, but as long as we're sweating the bills, well, you know. Yvonne continues, I'm talking completely off. Nickel-iron batteries. Look up the advantages of those if you don't know about them. They never die. And a Nissan Leaf. Yes, we're talking money. I figure $100 to $150K, but that's a guess. You need to look into your energy needs, and the Nissan Leaf in the mix, and its energy use, too. If you need a better AC unit and better insulation and roof repair to lower energy use, add it to the total amount. It's part of it. So I'm certain in your mind you think, how can this be done if you hardly get enough donations to survive? We prefer to call them contributions, but I get the message. Well, I have a suggestion on how you can do it, too, says Yvonne. Do a pledge page, not a donation page. This page should run for, 6 months. I pledge $25, says Yvonne. I say pledge because I think people would like to know that it's getting done before parting with their money. I think that takes away the it will never get done excuse or there will never be enough money excuse. Either we stop the talk and do it, or not. Do press releases. Ask HuffPo to write about the project. Ask Brad from the Green News Report to mention you. Try your hardest to have it in media spread, like Mike Malloy, Stephanie Miller, etc. It is time for, and this is important, it is time for us on the left to stop the talk for a few seconds and do something concrete and meaningful. How about getting a staunch anti-coal poisoning advocate off the power grid completely? I want to know that your voice was produced from a clean energy source, and I want to know I helped with a little bit of money to get that done. And yes, it takes money. Lots of it. Yes. Use me and this email, says Yvonne, as the spark. Use it to say, I asked for it. Get Bob off the power grid by 2012. Thank you, Yvonne in Florida. That is a magnificent idea, and it's something that we've wanted for a long time. Nothing would please me more than to begin every program by saying, no mountains were harmed in the making of this radio program. No streams were poisoned. No birth defects caused. And we would make it a pilot project for the whole left, liberal, progressive conversation sphere. Wouldn't that be wonderful? It sure feels like it would be to me. So maybe, depending on what you think of the idea, we can go forward. Because, I think it would be worthwhile. Just to be able to stand out in the yard and stick my right middle finger up in the air, pointed generally toward Appalachian Power, which runs almost exclusively on coal, and say, "Yeah," would be glorious. So just let me know what you think of Yvonne's idea. This is not my pitch. This is Yvonne's idea. We just had a contribution roll in. Thank you very, very much. It takes a little bit of doing to get all this done. But I think we could pull it off. But let me know. You know the email address, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Let me know what you think of Yvonne's idea of really putting a hard focus on getting the horn off the grid and all that it would entail. I think it would be, yes, great PR for the horn. But it would also be greater PR for the determination, or as Yvonne puts it, walking the walk, talking the talk and walking the walk, the determination that we have as a liberal and progressive community to take seriously the mounting needs of this planet, this fragile blue-green orb, this organic time machine hurtling through the waves of the universe. It'd be magnificent. So I just thought, I wanted to share that with you because, among other things, Yvonne asked me to. And again, thank you, Yvonne, for the darn fine suggestion. Here's hoping the broadcast is reaching you tonight with no clicks, no pops, no hisses, no garbles, no drops, no buffers, because it all looks like it's running pretty good here. So cross thy fingers. Nay, cross also thy toes. See, I get to use nay sometimes, too. I like that a lot. But it is Tuesday, but it does, as I noted, feel like Monday to me. And since, in fact, it does feel like Monday to me, it's going to be kind of hard to get the show going without periodically sort of wandering into a Moran Monday once removed. You won't mind that, will you? I hope not. Because there are so many Moran stories going on that are out and about and around. I hardly know where to start. Since we've got two or three Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman stories, I'm going to hold those for a little bit and go somewhere else. Now, ordinarily, one would save a story like this for, well, you know, Wednesday night prayer meeting. But I just can't. I can't let this one wait. I'm beginning to wonder if we're going to have to do a Sarah Palin with Herman Cain. Is this guy such an absolute, unmitigated ignoramus that we're going to have to just grandfather him right out of Moran Monday, Tuesday Redux even? Or do we keep him in just because, well, I would say he keeps one-upping himself, but it's more like an exponential kind of algebra he's doing here. He's 3x times Avogadro's numbering himself up. The latest? Well, there's two. One in which Hermie proves that he doesn't have any grasp whatsoever of the Constitution. Chris Wallace had him on his weird little Sunday right-wing batshit crazy program. Wherein Chris Wallace tried to ask him a little bit about, well, you know, Muslims. Oh, let's just let Hermie say it for himself. Hermie? Where are you, Herm? Oh, there you are, Herm.
I mean, my question, I guess, is this isn't ground zero in New York City. It's not hallowed ground. Don't Americans have a right of whatever religion under the...
Okay, a little bit of setup. We're talking about the mosque that some folks want to build in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Thus the statement, well, God, it's not ground zero. It's not hallowed ground. You know, it's just Murfreesboro. Shh. Memo to Chris Wallace. Murfreesboro is too hallowed ground. I mean, I'm just saying, not that you can't build a mosque there, but there was some rather ugly unpleasantness that took place in and around places like Franklin, Tennessee, and Murfreesboro, Tennessee, 150 or so years ago. You did just say it. Not that I would expect a member of the for-profit media to have that kind of historical depth or context, but yeah, there was a little blood spilled there. Okay, there was a lot of blood spilled there. But who's counting? Right? Yeah.
It isn't ground zero in New York City. It's not hallowed ground. Don't Americans have a right of whatever religion under the Constitution, which you speak so much about, to free speech and freedom to worship?
To the people in Murfreesboro, it is hallowed ground. They are objecting to the intentions of trying to get Sharia law. Now, that judge may have ruled, but this case isn't over with yet. I believe it's going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. It's not hallowed ground. It's hallowed ground to the people in Murfreesboro.
But couldn't any community then say, we don't want a mosque in our community?
They could say that, Chris, let's go back to the fundamental issue that the people are basically saying that they're objecting to. They're objecting to the fact that Islam is both a religion and a set of laws, Sharia law. That's the difference between any one of our other traditional religions where it's just about religious purposes. The people in the community know best. And I happen to side with the people in the community.
So you're saying any community, if they want to ban a mosque?
Yes, they have the right to do that.
Yeah, who needs that pesky old First Amendment anyway? I mean, it darn near kept our Constitution from getting ratified. Yeah, who needs it? Because, after all, Islam is the only religion on the face of the planet that has religious laws. The only religion. Yeah, that whole thing in Deuteronomy, or the, I don't know, whatever it is, it says, thou shalt not eat thee of thy shellfish, lest thou be cast into the fiery pits of hell. Well, I'm gonna roast. I am so screwed. I think I've eaten about 4 pounds of shrimp in the past 24 hours. God is so mad at me. I'm out there eating that shellfish with that wonderful cocktail sauce. And if you use Zatarain's unsolicited advertisement, if you use Zatarain's boiling bags to season your shellfish, and you happen to have some red potatoes and some corn in there, is the Zatarain's bag and the lemons that you squoze into the water and the corn and potatoes, are they also equally unclean, and do they merit stoning? Oh, well, see, I got sidetracked in religious law that isn't Sharia. Because you heard that, right? You heard Hermie. Yeah.
To the fundamental issue that the people are basically saying that they're objecting to. They're objecting to the fact that Islam is both a religion and a set of laws, Sharia law. That's the difference between any one of our other traditional religions where it's just about religious purposes.
What are you talking about, Willis? I'm going to start speaking in tongues, and it ain't even Wednesday yet. No, really! You heard what I heard, right? As opposed to our other religions, which are just about religion. I ain't got nothing to do with any religious laws. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the earth. I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other gods before me. That's just about religion, that's not about laws. Right. Stone disobedient children. If a woman gets raped, the rapist can pay a certain amount of money and walk away scot-free. That's another one of them religious laws. And you got, well, you know, they're the be the friend of birds and beetles like Jainism preaches. Don't swat that mosquito. Let him suck a little blood. You'll never miss it. You know, Jainism. Don't swat that cow out into the street. He has as much a right to live in your house as you do. You know, Hinduism. Right. Sure. But those are all just religions. Those aren't religious laws. Why? Because Herman Cain is a moron. I mean, really, just moron. Hang on, I gotta catch my breath. Otherwise I'm gonna lose it. Help me, Gnarls.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there, without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
That just helps a little bit. That helps me from just going into the microphone for a little while. But isn't that nice? And the song really captures it. If you're a Repiglican, and especially if you're a teabagging Repiglican, you don't have to think anymore. I mean, the little synapses can, I don't know, they can take up needlepoint. They don't even have to touch. They don't even have to pass those little electrical signals from one to the other that forms, you know, when it happens on thousands and thousands of firings per millisecond, you know, the brain, you don't have to have one of those if you're a teabagger. Because if you did, see, Chris Wallace would have been grabbing the arms of his chair. His handlers would have had to stick a tennis ball in his mouth and duct tape it shut, or he would have come across the table at Hermie. You're out of your freaking mind, Herm. You ever hear of the First Amendment, Herm? Didn't happen. You know, at the very least, the de minimis standard for this would be for Chris Wallace to look across at Herm and say, "You're never coming back on this show. I don't care if you pay in platinum. I don't care if you bring bags of gold. You are never coming back on this show because you have no right to participate in a dialogue among intelligent people. You can go hoot and holler in an alley somewhere talking about your Islam is the only religion that has religious laws craziness, but you don't get to do it on the public airwaves or even on cable. You just don't get to. I mean, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, and Muhammad, and Krishna, and Vishnu, and Buddha, all of you, flying spaghetti monster, holy mackerel, this guy just sat on Fox, and, well, it's Fox, I mean, come on, Rupert, you know, and looked America, the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking part of America that wears Velcro shoelaced, Velcro tabbed shoes because they can't quite master the shoelaces. You know, that part of America. And said, nope, no right to a mosque. What if... I mean, these are pitches across the... Look like water... grapefruits coming across the plate. You know... You could hit him with a broom handle. Because the next one is, well, if the folks in Murfreesboro don't want a mosque, what happens if somebody somewhere else doesn't want a Southern Baptist church? Because you know at that point, Hermie can't say, well, they have that right too. Because there's lots of Southern Baptist teabaggers. What's that, Marveline? He says, we ain't got no right in no Baptist church. I think you may be a secret closet Muslim, Marveline. Boom! Oh, dear. I've hardly even gotten started. And I'm already into the part of the program. But it only gets worse. You know how the Muslims don't have the right to have a mosque in Murfreesboro, Tennessee? Oh, dear me. Hell of a time to be out of tequila. Well, Hermie's back. Yeah, we're starting the program with two Hermie clips. Oh, yeah, okay, here we go. Yeah, Ron and Raleigh. Verily, thou shalt burn in a lake of hot sauce. Were you by any chance wearing two types of fabric, and were you freshly shaven when you ate those shrimp, Bob? You are a sinner of the first order. Well, you know, I've been keeping a beard lately, but it had been trimmed, and I don't just let it all go. I keep some of it trimmed down below the jawline, and I had recently done that, and... Dear God, the pants are cotton, and the shirt's a blend. And that doesn't say nothing for the little neoprene hickey that I got at Netroots Nation that cowgirl Patty handed me that keeps my glasses hanging around my neck. Oh, dear. You know, you just think about that up there at the pearly gates answering the questions. Did you ever give to the poor, Bob? Oh, lots! Lots! All the time! Did you visit the sick? Yep! Done that! Were you kind to babies and small animals? Got it covered, Lord! Well, Bob, you're going to hell. What? Yeah, you not only ate the shrimp, you bragged about it. You rubbed the nose of the Almighty in cocktail sauce, Bob. You can't do that, Bob. Bad, Bob. Bad things, man. Bad things. Off to the Lake of Cholula with him. Unsolicited advertisement. That's my favorite hot sauce, Cholula. With the little wooden top. Yeah. Oh, it's good. This was Heinz cocktail sauce, though, and it really is I can make my own, but this was really awesome. Heinz makes a darn fine cocktail sauce. David in Tennessee, just asking. Excuse me, but doesn't the Jewish faith have pages of do's and don'ts that they consider law? Reckon Hermie will play well with certain parts of DLA retirement land? No. But see, that's a religion. And he made that distinction very clearly. Everybody else but Muslims, you know, they're just following their religion. There's no law about it. And it does. It makes your head feel like you just go... Because it's another one of those give up on civilization kind of things. Andy out in Redwood City noting, Mr. Bob, yesterday's Financial Times article, White House aide hails progress in sealing negotiation, page 2. Page 2. Herman Cain is quoted as saying there was, quote, no need to raise the debt ceiling, unquote. And describe the whole debate as a charade. Yeah, let's just let the interest rates soar on the debt we have when the credit rating gets lowered from AAA. It'll be a wonderful outcome, costing us all more in debt payments to cover the higher interest costs. Herman, call him Hermie. That's only because I grew up watching reruns of The Munsters. Hermie. Oh, Herman. One of my favorite scenes, you know, the great, great Fred Gwynn. Remember when we had matches that would strike anywhere? I don't even think you can buy those anymore. But just one of those great little physical comedy moments when Fred Gwynn takes a Light Anywhere match, scratches his pants, and catches his pants on fire. And he's standing there smoking and smoldering for a little bit before he bursts into open flame. And then he screams a little bit and puts it out. And then sheepishly says, funny, never happens to John Wayne. It's kind of where Herman Cain is. If anybody but a teabagger said the crazy, nonsensical, nobody home, elevator don't go to the top, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, you know, if any Democrat said that, they would be savaged by the for-profit media. Hermie says that, and, you know, it's just another day with the teabaggers who might very well wind up running this country, who are at present trying to run this country into the ground. Because how many of them? You know, I had a conversation with Dr. Bill earlier today. He's absolutely flummoxed by the Grover Norquist pledge that some 250-plus members of the House of Representatives have taken, promising... that they will never, ever, 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 never know, never not know how, I ain't got my fingers crossed, promise, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, oh Jesus, never to vote to raise taxes. In other words, they are more concerned about the wants and desires of Grover Norquist than they are about their own constituents. And Dr. Bill was just flummoxed by that. And yet, thus far, it appears they are getting their way. Andy notes, Herman is truly crazy. Nuts. How he got on corporate boards and where he is in life is beyond me. Well, not really beyond me. It's all about sticking to the fascist agenda and pleasing your corporate masters, no matter how outrageous. And, I mean, we really are smack dab on top of outrageous right now. I mean, outrageous with a side of fries, outrageous with chips and dip, outrageous with a capital outrageous. Debt ceiling doesn't matter, but this is the fun one, especially in light of the Muslims can't build a mosque in Murfreesboro. These two quotes. Are picture-perfect little sound postcards from the land of crazy. You know, I buy flour here that says, from the land of Kansas. Well, Herman comes from the land of crazy. I'm just full of little product placements tonight, aren't I? No, he comes from the land of crazy. He sat down with the Washington Times, Herm did. He sat down with their editorial board. Now, remember, of course, we're not talking about the Washington Post. We're talking about the Washington Times. The Washington Times, of course, being owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. And we're not going to take time to go through the wedding purification ceremony. There's handkerchiefs and bodily fluids and nakedness and stuff. You don't want to. And they asked, of course, I mean, you got Herman Cain in the room. Put the nickel in and walk away, because the crazy's just going to come out like a busted pop machine. They asked Herm about Mitt Romney. Now, I don't know what Herm's religion is. I'm thinking it's something that probably involves rolling on the floor, speaking in tongues, prophesying, drinking strychnine, and handling the occasional pit viper. But they asked Herm about Mitt Romney. And you know how Herm doesn't have any tolerance for the Muslims? Well, Herm apparently doesn't have much tolerance for the Mormons either. If you want to, you can take that second M out, and you'll be right there. See, I don't have any tolerance for them, because I don't have any tolerance for any organized religion. If it's not cooking in your soul, nobody else is. Well, if you can't dredge it up inside yourself, ain't nobody going to hand it to you on a plate. And if they tell you they are engaged in a hustle. But no, Herm doesn't have any tolerance for the Mormons either. This is pretty precious, too. Come on, Herm.
He would be a good choice, but I don't believe he could win for the following reasons. One, he ran before. He has an ankle bracelet on called Romney Care. Secondly,
ankle bracelet? Really? That's the analogy, Herm? He's wearing an ankle bracelet? Did you just allege that Mitt Romney is some sort of a criminal? Oh, this is precious. It only gets better.
Know the South, and you have to win the South. Mitt Romney did win the South when he ran against, when John McCain won the South and Mike Huckabee won the South. And I think that the reason that he will have a difficult time winning the South is because when he ran the first time, he did not do a good job of communicating his religion. Unfortunately, it doesn't bother me. But
wait, what? Unfortunate. He didn't do a good job communicating his religion. Unfortunately, it doesn't bother me. Dr. Freud. Courtesy phone. Dr. Freud. Courtesy phone. Unfortunately, it doesn't bother me. Oh, I struggle against some of these guffaws, but you know what? You just got to let them out sometimes. They're a little bit like bats. If you don't, they're just going to guano all over the place. And unfortunately, that doesn't bother me. Oh, I want to hear that again.
A difficult time went in the South is because when he ran the first time, he did not do a good job of communicating his religion. Unfortunately, it doesn't bother me, but I do know that it's an issue with a lot of Southerners. You don't win South Carolina and Florida and Georgia, you can't win the nomination. And then you can't win the presidency. I like Mitt. I supported Mitt Romney in the last presidential election, but he didn't get the nomination. John McCain got the nomination. And so I don't think that he is going to be any stronger this time around against Barack Obama, even though Barack Obama has a terrible record. Terrible.
Well, you know, Herm is speaking a little soupçon of truth. Because the South is not going to vote for a Mormon. Because the South is dominated by the Southern Baptist Church, the Church of Christ. I mean, come on. The Church of Christ won't even let a tambourine in the building, okay? Real hard shell types. I mean, they have to sing a cappella because there's a psalm that says, sing and make melody in thy heart. So that means they can't have any musical instruments. Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the United Churches of Christ. I'm talking about Church Christ. You got to say it like that, Church Christ. No pianos. No band. I mean, not even a castanet. No finger snapping. No kazoos. No pitch pipes. That whole sing and make melody in thy heart thing always bothered me, because doesn't that mean you're supposed to just sing silently? Oh, but God Almighty, they don't. I mean, it is some hair-raising a cappella. At this point, the fans of the old Andy Griffith show have just run off to YouTube because they've just been reminded, as I have, of that marvelous scene where Barney explains what a cappella is to Andy. A cappella. Never mind. I've been away from the microphone for too long. We'll work this out of my system yet. No, Herm speaks some truth, because the South is not going to vote for somebody who thinks that he becomes a god when he dies and gets his own planet and belongs to a religion where they are daily 24/7 baptizing dead people. Yeah, that gets around the whole planet Kolob thing, the whole Jesus and Satan are brothers sort of... Yeah, they're really, I mean, right now they're not disposed to vote for Mitt Romney. They're going to be really not disposed to vote for Mitt Romney shortly thereafter. But it's the fact that Herman Cain feels like he is the person who is competent to inveigh on these questions. Because understand, the South's not going to go for Mitt Romney simply because of the ancient bigotries of which the South is largely comprised. The South defines itself by who the South hates. There are layers upon layers. I mean, it's like a really big, nasty spider web of the enemy of my enemy is my friend stuff. Constantly changing and shifting and diverging. We are seriously up to our eyeballs in some crazy. Ron and Raleigh, did you say plate? The Mormons got theirs handed to them on a plate. Several golden plates, as a matter of fact. Yeah, the ones that you can only read by looking, using stones to look through the bottom of your hat. I mean, that sounds loopy to me. To people who are hard-shell believers in the true and literal... And no, you can just forget about that. But this is where we are. Mitt Romney hasn't done a good job of explaining his religion, and yet no matter how hard Muslims try, their explanations just don't matter because Herman Cain's bigotries are, I don't know, reinforced in the ground with rebar or something 10 feet deep. And they can ban a mosque. For those reasons, I suspect that Hermie probably wouldn't have any problem with a little town called Gould, Arkansas. G-O-U-L-D, Gould, Arkansas. I mean, First Amendment, Schmerst Amendment, right? This was comes from over at Gawker. The City Council of Gould, Arkansas just passed an ordinance that forbids new organizations from forming without the City Council's permission. It applies to any organization from book groups to Justin Bieber fan club chapters. Well, okay, I could kind of get on board with the last one, but you know what? Democracy's a messy business, and we just kind of got to make it. I mean, you know, if you want to have your local garden club, you're going to have to put up with the occasional Bieber fever club. This says the article, this applies to any organization from book groups to Justin Bieber fan club chapters. But it especially applies to groups that like to talk about local politics. Groups that like to talk about local politics like the Gould Citizens Advisory Council, described in Gawker as a grassrootsy organization targeted by the new ordinance. Because the new ordinance, A, made Gould Citizens Advisory Council illegal. It evicted them from their meeting place. Yeah. Gould, Arkansas. There was some hope. There was some hope. The ordinance, when it was passed by the city council, was vetoed. The mayor of Gould, Ernest Nash, vetoed the ordinance because he kind of looked at it and said, wow, this really just sort of does a tap dance on the First Amendment now, doesn't it? And he vetoed it. But the city council overrode his veto and made it law anywho. Thereby guaranteeing that the town of Gould, Arkansas, will have, you know, crippling legal debt. Their next meeting is scheduled for August, at which point they will declare their new ordinance in effect. You want to hear the ordinance itself? This is some fun. This is some fun language that'll just give. I don't know. It'll give people. It'll give people with a smattering of legislative analysis, the turtle squirts. No new organizations shall be allowed to exist within the city of Gould without approval from majority of the city council. Now, there's only 850 people or so in Gould. It's down in the southeast corner of Arkansas. But those 850 people cannot talk politics. Now, presumably, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party already exist. I imagine, Arkansas being Arkansas, that the Democratic Party is probably two cranky people who can meet in a phone booth. But new groups, like, well, I don't know, Greens, or maybe even, who knows, Teabaggers. Unless the Teabaggers were pre-existing. Sorry, no. This is stunning. Sure, it's a little town of 850 people. But last year, when one man's house was allowed to burn to the ground, that was one man's house, one family's home. And that was stunning, too. Oh, by the way, at the same time that they were shutting down free speech in Gould, the city council also rejected funds for sewage system improvements. So there's more than one means by which one might say that the city of Gould is full of, well, you know. It just goes on and on and on. And no, ACLU, is the ACLU even allowed to exist in Arkansas? I don't know. So we got that. Oh, we got tons of crazy. All over the place. And before you get some misguided notion that it's just the South, I'd like to remind you that the first state ever to consider secession was not South Carolina. Nope. Nor was it Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, Maryland, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas. Mm-mm. Nope. The first state in the Union ever to consider secession was New Hampshire. In fact, they tried to hire Daniel Webster. Tried to hire Daniel Webster to handle their secession claims. And it is now being reported that in the past week, New Hampshire joined the handful of states that have engaged in nullification under the claim of states' rights. Their governor allowed SB 148 to become law without his signature. SB 148 was one of those laws that teabaggers are so fond of that declares that states can override federal congressionally passed legislation. In this Think Progress story, it's noted that according to polling data, 22% of the American people think that the Affordable Care Act has already been repealed. 26% ain't sure. Well, I don't know. I keep hearing about that Obamacare. Marvelline, has that piece of communism been retracted yet so we can be free to die in agony and misery without no insurance coverage being forced on us by the overreaching federal government in violation of our state's rights? Or should I do that with a New Hampshire accent? So 62 is 82. 48% of America is either not sure or outright wrong about the Affordable Care Act. Thank God we're saved from that Obamacare. I'd hate to be sick and actually get taken care of at a hospital. Terrible accent. Sorry. Not used to, you know, I'm not used to doing New England accents. I'm just not. It's probably more Maine anyway. But New Hampshire's on the bandwagon. On the nullification bandwagon. New Hampshire got on the nullification bandwagon with pre-Civil War South Carolina, pre-Civil War North Carolina, pre-Civil War Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, oy. God almighty. I mean, no, it really is. It's one of those... It's just a stunning display of exactly how far this nation has fallen. And sure, yes, we can talk about the whole Rupert Murdoch thing. Well, I've got 53 million employees. I can't be held accountable for every blessed hacking scandal that goes on now, can I? Hey, what? Sure, we can talk about that. Of course, I guess, the question is, will that outfit go down as a result of this? And frankly, I don't know. I suspect not. If there were any justice in this world, Rupert Murdoch wouldn't have ever gotten rich in the first place. He would have been some cheap little chiseler out there hustling the... Wait a minute. He is a cheap little chiseler out there hustling the rubes. But he wouldn't have gotten this far. Looking backwards, you do understand that Rupert, well, he had to have help. The 1996 Telecommunications Act was part of that help. Knowing that there was no longer a fairness doctrine in the United States, that was a big help. So, look for a whole lot of sound and fury, but look for it to signify nothing. Because that's kind of where we are. I'm not trying to be a downer or anything. I mean, I think we've had some pretty good fun so far. But there are some realities out there that are sort of well, unavoidable. But that's okay, because it's conversation radio, and we're going to do some conversing. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4. Head on your nickel 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Use it. It's all there to enhance the conversation. We will be back after this little break, after the marking the official end of the filibuster. This is the horn.
I'm gonna leave. I wake up in the morning, I'm hungry to root, but I get no sympathy, baby, you're too aloof. You better change. Yes, I'm begging you, please. Cause if you don't start drinking, I'm gonna leave.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2800. 2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed. 6 minutes past the hour. I don't know where the... This is Tuesday, right? Yeah. I don't know where the Green News Report is. Maybe I missed something along the way. But didn't see it in my inbox this afternoon. I'll have to check in on Brad, see how he's doing. It is the second hour of the program, and thank you very kindly to the two people who have made bill paying significantly more likely to happen for the mid-month bills. Thank you very kindly for the two $100 donations. That goes a long way. Oh, that goes a long way. Thank you very much. Everything goes a long way. Trust me when I say it. Email in from David in Tennessee. He says, sadly, it's Rupert's own stockholders that'll put him out to pasture, not any government agency or their officers. To wit, I offer, says David, 4% of News Corp sales come from his beloved Pipas. Less than 2% of the profits come from pipas. The heavy hitters on the inside want News Corp out of the paper biz. This debacle has stopped Roop from buying another very profitable business, B-Sky B. It's his high-ranking shareholders that want his ass on a sailboat taking shrimps and bobbies. His utterly horrid performance in front of Parliament today put the scent of cooked goose in the air. Well, I hope along with that, David, that there's the scent of a little cooked liver as well, Rupert eating his own. That, yeah, it was an abominable performance. But ultimately, what really needs to happen is that the trail must be run all the way to Rupert. I don't care. Get the damn scoop. Because you know that that was the admonition and that was the attitude, right? By the way, Todd sent in an email on Yvonne's off the grid idea. Hey Bob, great to have you back in the saddle. I'd love to have my name on a plaque for having contributed to getting the program off the grid. Great idea, Yvonne. Signed, Todd. Thanks, Todd. Let me know. Is that something you'd find worthwhile? Because it would be nice. It would be awfully nice to get off the grid and have the coal monkey completely off of our backs. But anyway. So let's go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra, how you doing?
Oh, you know, I'm all right. I'm glad I wasn't, you know, waiting for the housing voucher, though.
Oh, that was, yeah, Dallas?
Well, I mean...
What, 1,000 people waiting for how many vouchers?
5,000.
5,000.
Five. This is the thing. It's just kind of nonchalant reporting, but there's 100, you know, vouchers and 5,000 people.
So we've got Chicago, Dallas, and Atlanta now where these stampedes have taken place, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, just in the face of what's going on in Washington, you know, you just got to shake your head and think, you know, what in the F? Because that is some serious unmet need, you know, beyond the beyond. I don't even know what to think. And I had an interview with some of the people, and it's just like this one poor girl where I go to school and, yeah, I'm trying. I have three jobs that I'm working on. You know, I could really use a reduction in rent. And I'm just thinking, what in the hell does that sound like? I mean, it's just kind of there's no way of making the connections, you know, for these people. You know what I'm saying? Because it's horrific. Oh, wait, honey, you got three jobs and you're going to school. You know, you're paying market rates for rent. I mean, there's something wrong with that.
Oh, I remember when George Bush said that three jobs was uniquely American.
Oh, yeah, no, but it's just like, and, you know, all those, you know, those people are just sort of just wanting just a leg up, just a little bit of help, you know, and it's just not coming. And in fact, it may never come.
Well, that was the point of what I just said, Sandra. Because I remember when George Bush said that, but he ain't there anymore.
God.
You know, there is a reason for things like public housing. You know, look at Section 8. That, you know, in its own way, that was kind. Section 8 is a sort of privatization of the public housing burden.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of some sort of subsidies that you pass on. You know, for certain landlords who want to get into that game, but it's still privatized. I hear what you're saying, but I mean the thing is the sort of breakdown of, you know, the sort of understanding of a kind of social contract to go along with this sort of full-on exploitation has completely broken down now.
Yeah, it's in a place of total dysfunction because there's not another so-called industrialized country, over in Europe or whatever, that doesn't say that housing is an essential fundamental right. You know, because it's so essentially what is it, Maslow? You know, food, clothing, shelter, you know, the hierarchy of needs stuff, that it the kind of things that if you don't have them, you can't call what you may have life.
Yeah, no, I mean, I also wonder, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's one thing to have the north-south divide, you know, the third world, first world, whatever. But, you know, what is the capitalist system going to do with the sort of destruction of the liberal democracy? I put that in quotes, which is what we're supposed to have. But in order to have a democracy, you have to have certain basic guarantees for the citizenry. But that's going away rapidly. So I'm just wondering what's next.
Well, it's going away into a sort of new mercantilism, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I just mean with stick with the U.S. I mean, I'm not too sure what the hell they think is supposed to come next because... You know,
it's like you said the other night. Every time they let down their guard, they show their essential Malthusianism, or Malthusism, or however you pronounce it, because you can't approach, and this is a crisis. This is a real life crisis when 5,000 people show up for 100 vouchers, and there's, I mean, this is not camping out for Star Wars.
No, no, no. I mean, those days are over with. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I just think there's a sort of level of, you know, maybe you can describe it as like just a murmuring of chaotic unrest already in existence here when you have that kind of setup. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh,
it's
yes.
Already here.
Right. And
it has to be because that's not normal. You know, that ain't right.
But then again, that's kind of you were the first one to utter it on the program. That's the new normal. And
it ain't gonna be normal for long though because, like I said, you can't sustain. It's not gonna be able to sustain a democratic model as this progresses because you know what Obama is now. You know they're all embracing you know that horrible Gang of Six has arisen again. It's just like, are you kidding me with that? And it's funny if you think about it. Isn't it funny how he convened that fiscal conference, whatever, Erskine Bowles thing? And here we are, full circle. This is exactly what he wants. Because we're going to be left with the Simpson-Bowles recommendations. Watch.
Yeah, and you know, of course, that's Alan Simpson, who thinks that the government is what did he say? It's a Social Security is a cow being sucked on by the 30 million or cow with 30 million teats or something.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy. But the thing is, while you know Obama is working overtime to get his $3 to $4 trillion in cuts, the professional left is wringing their hands about Warren. It's just like, you know, about Elizabeth Warren and that betrayal. But it's like, oh, what the hell, you know? I don't even know what to say about that. The whole thing of her running for Senate, it's like, oh, yeah, you want her to be in the Senate that Durbin said was owned by the banks. Don't you want her out? She's much better.
Get her where she can do, you know, let her do that thing. Let her get that office off the ground, and then on that track record, run for Senate.
Well, not only that, but she should be on Dr. Phil, and that, I mean, she's really good on TV.
Yeah.
And talking just sort of, and the Obama administration did a great job of cutting her off in that realm, I noticed, because she ain't been anywhere near the TV since. So, I just can't get, you know, all worked up about this Warren for Senate thing. I just think it's a red herring, because in the meanwhile, we're still looking at these freaks coming up with this plan that's going to alter Social Security, which I say again has nothing, absolutely zero to do with the deficit.
Right.
And it's just like, what is this? And why is this man insisting on bringing
Going back to the housing issue into which all of this wraps, this is all just one big toxic pie as far as what's going to happen to the struggling class. Pardon my paranoia for a minute, Sandra, but, you know, the thing is, if people do wind up in the streets, guess what they get to do with them? Gun them down. And then the next thing you know, you don't have a housing problem anymore. You know what I'm saying? I hate that kind of thinking, but it's like I've been taught to think that way.
So we're back to the die-off again.
Yes, with a little help, maybe.
Yeah, well, no, I don't.
Bullets
are
cheap.
I don't really know. It's just kind of, I'm just getting concerned about the sheer numbers, because you don't hear about stuff like that unless it's so over the top, like the 100 versus 5,000. But I figure that is the situation increasingly all over the place with the tent cities that are out of sight, out of mind.
Well, even the aforementioned Section 8, you know, the waiting list for Section 8 in just about any part of the country.
It's years.
Yeah, it is. It is years long. It's the kind of situation that we used to describe when we talked about the horrors of the Soviet Union, where you had to wait years to get into a party-approved apartment in one of those hideous cement complexes in, you know, Minsk.
Yeah,
but it's here. It's home. This is our world now.
No, I mean, I'm just sort of, like I said, just gobsmacked by, just the sort of, you know, how desperate. Because that's, I don't know. I don't know. I just am kind of like.
Well, you know, I saw, and I can't remember where, and I'm kind of coming back to what you were saying about the left getting all worked up about Elizabeth Warren. I saw a breakdown, and I think maybe this speaks to some of that. I saw a breakdown of what the left blogosphere looks like, and it was particularly with regard to Daily Kos. All right, and it was not encouraging, because the fact of the matter is the reason our side gets significantly more worked up about things like that than, say, you know, 100 people vying for 5,000 housing vouchers is because of the demographic makeup of the left liberal blogosphere.
Oh, yeah, no, it all goes back, I guess. I mean, that's a reasonable explanation, because it just seems really bubbled out and clueless. It's like, hello? I mean, we know 25 million people unemployed or underemployed, and that's the big crisis, not all this other gibberish they're going on about.
And yet there's still no... the whole, you know, where are the jobs, John? We ought to be screaming that from the rooftops. But how many are, Sandra? How many are?
No, I know, but I mean, do you realize that these plans that are being put out there actually is raising taxes on poor people?
Yes.
That's another thing I've noticed, you know, when I'm going into the wonk reading mode, I'm like, are you kidding me? They want to lower the effective tax rates on rich people and raise the tax rates on the bottom quintile of, you know, the economic ladder. And so it's just like, are you kidding me? We're still back to cutting taxes for the rich at the end of the day, Bob. That's what it all comes down to again.
Well, the Tom Tomorrow that you sent me with...
Shut up.
Oh, what was that?
Okay. it's middleman this week, debt limit debacle.
Yeah, with Barack Obama, president not sure, playing middleman.
Oh, listen, let me just read the one thing that killed me. He leaps, middleman, he leaps into action, ready once again to deploy the awesome power of preemptive compromise. I'm putting Social Security and Medicare on the table, and they have this man as a turtle. It's just, listen, I couldn't even believe this comic strip, because it's just everything that, you know, we've discussed, including the appearance of...
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McCracker, and it's just like, come on.
I was just knocked down by that. And by the way, I finally found these stats on Daily Coast. It's pretty stunning. The Daily Coast demographics: still white, over 50, well off, male. Maybe that's why the discussion is so squirreled.
Well, they're the ones running the, give us some money so we can elect, you know, make Warren run for Senate. It's just like, no, you're not going to get my dollars for that bullshit. I don't know. It just sort of struck me. I'm like, God damn, between Fire Dog Lake and this, it's just, you know, the left is just completely out of touch as Obama is. You know what I mean? So it's a bit of a mess on our side.
Well, and it's particularly frustrating, Sandra, because on the one hand, you know, you've got the Jane Hampshires of the world. You know, I'll never forget that panel that was hosted at the last Netroots Nation. The president, what to do when he's just not that into you? And it was kind of pitiful. On the one hand, you know, where the man can do nothing right. And on the other hand, the people who think he can do no wrong.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, you and I occupy that place where we kind of go, well, we think he knows what to do, but he's not doing it. And at the same time, acknowledge that he's got some stuff right. I mean, the student loan thing was not a bad idea. And
no,
he got it done.
And he's black. And, you know, that's a whole, you know, every day that's a new... you know, there's a new slant to that all the time with Obama. So, I mean, yeah, it's.
Well, did you see that thing over at Crooks and Liars about what if John McCain had won?
Oh, no, I didn't know. Is it, no, what's...
Well, I mean, one of the central thesis to it is there would be no Tea Party. Bear in mind, the debt and the deficit would still be, and this is the important part, the debt and the deficit would still be there. And it would still be what it is, because the debt and the deficit are made up of, you know, all these off-the-books wars, largely. Yeah, because, as you noted, you know, Social Security ain't part of the problem. But there would be no Tea Party. There would be no tea baggers. There would be no people walking around with posters saying, if Brown can't do it, Browning can.
Oh, God. You know what? I have not heard that one. What?
Oh, yeah, that was one of the posters at one of the teabagging rallies. It was a picture of a Browning semi-automatic pistol, and it was all the talk about Scott Brown stopping the Affordable Care Act or whatever. I forget what it was he was supposed to stop.
No.
You know, if Brown can't do it, Browning can.
I got it. Wow. Yeah, anyway. Sorry, what were you saying before?
Well, no, it's just none of that would exist.
With the TV, yeah.
Because at the, you know, well, I'm trying not to use any phrases off the list.
No, you can go ahead and use them. I'm not saying we can't use them.
But I mean, you know, I want to be real straight up about it, because if we're trying to get them out, let's get them out. But no, I mean, there's no way in that alternate universe. You know, this is the one where Captain Kirk has the goatee. That alternate universe, there's no way that any of that stuff comes out, because in it all comes down to the fact that that one's in the White House.
Well, no, but is that the same Star Trek episode when Spock is having sex in the cave?
I'm not sure. That might be. Yeah, because he was a real evil, grasping. You know, I think he had a goatee too.
No, yeah, okay. I know that's that episode. He's laughing, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he's laughing evilly. Right.
Shut up. You know what? I'm a huge Star Trek, original Star Trek fan, so I've seen them all repeatedly. You know, come on. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We got to have our shallow moments. In fact, I had an email from Ron in Raleigh a couple of days ago of a cartoon that certainly I don't see around here and doesn't run in the local paper. It's called Canderville.
Oh,
it was a dandy, because it featured a black guy in an easy chair watching Star Trek, or watching Obama. But the best part of it was that he has a Star Trek T-shirt on, and I'm thinking, you know, okay, we're making progress. Yeah, we've got black guys in comic strips with a Star Trek with the Federation symbol on their T-shirt, but the, you know, the balloons, the speech balloons coming out of the box say the following: the first black president, whose parents' marriage was illegal in many states at the time he was born, says the issue of marriage equality for gays is best left to the states. Adding, when has America ever gone wrong leaving civil rights issues to the states?
Well, speaking of that, you know, it's funny how, I don't know if he's triangulating or what's going on, but all of a sudden, Obama is, you know, the biggest champion of gay rights since whenever. Because now he's pushing a bill to actually repeal DOMA. Have you seen this?
Yeah, oh yeah, and they're going to have a little hearing on that.
This is great. This is a huge move, which will make it, you know, legal for you know, queers to marry foreigners and all that. It would be a huge step in the right direction. So I'm not too sure if once again we have Obama as Eisenhower, you know, liberally, socially liberal,
yeah.
And then we see what's going on the other side.
Well,
I mean, it's interesting.
Well, they're having a hearing. They're having a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee. The full hearing is tomorrow at 10 a.m. And as Maura mentioned in her email earlier today, she said the witness list looks like the people that inhabit the Star Wars bar. That's not a compliment, because you know, we've got Tony Perkins.
Oh no! Oh God, he's
we've got horrible. David Austin Nimox from the Alliance Defense Fund. You know, you've got some advocates there too. Thomas Minnery, Senior Vice President for Public Policy of Focus on the Family. Maybe Tony Perkins isn't on here. No, it's the Focus on the Family guy that's there.
Oh.
You know, because they're all going to have to get divorced if, I think we're all pretty well convinced at this point, after all the video, Sandra, that if gay marriage equity becomes a matter of law across the United States, at least one heterosexual marriage will break up, and that's the marriage of Michelle and Marcus Bachman.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't know, you know, as far as that couple goes. Obviously, you know, they're in their bubble, because what in the world did they not realize when that fool made his presentation, it would be like...
You mean the gay barbarians who need to be disciplined?
Well, it's just sort of like...
Preferably with assless chaps? I mean, God.
My God, it's so obvious. It's just like, damn, dude, you need to get out of the limelight if you're going to try to run this program, because you're going to give your woman more than a migraine.
Well, see, and that was the next place I was going.
Right.
Yeah, no wonder she's got the headaches.
Yeah, she's going to have a whole bunch of headaches, though, because I didn't even realize until I got a gander at that guy. Come on now.
Did you happen to see John Stewart have to have the Jerry Seinfeld intervention?
Oh no, I didn't.
Oh, that's worth looking up, because the John Stewart is just struggling not to go to the cheap, easy "that man, how gay is that man" jokes.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, he had to resist that.
Yeah, and Seinfeld came in with an intervention. It was By the way, the corrections are coming in via email, Sandra. Spock had the goatee in that episode. It was actually a Van Dyke, says Darlene, and it was a parallel universe. The episode was Mirror, Mirror, and Darlene says, yes, I'm a Trekkie, too. Been in love with Mr. Spock for decades.
No. I just thought that one episode when he had that woman that he was sleeping with, that was just a crazy episode.
Well, that one where they went down to the pleasure planet and he lost all his Vulcan conditioning. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, you know, that was like one of my favorites. And, I was a big Uhuru fan. And so when they had the kiss that was seen around the world, you know.
Yeah, I always loved that, though, because America's first interracial kiss had to be compelled by aliens.
Right.
You know, they made them do it.
No.
Yeah, come on. They're zooming around the galaxy, and you know, James Kirk's just one big horn dog. I don't think he had to be forced that much.
Well, no. Come on now. No. But, yeah, Star Trek. I mean, that was only on for, like, two seasons, wasn't it?
Three. And yet it has become, in many ways, our national cultural reference point.
No, it's amazing, just that short time. But, anyway, listen, you know, I really don't have anything else,
because
you've got so much.
Yeah.
I can't cope. But listen, this is one other bit on the Tom Tomorrow that really, I mean, it's a bit pedestrian, but it really had me going. It's this thing they have who's Eric Cantor. He said, forget it, Rhino. It's my way or the non-federally
funded highway. Yes.
Oh, shit. And then he said, and then middleman says, you are on the verge of almost annoying me. Now, that just sounds right about right for Obama, don't it? Damn, that was, I mean, this is such a...
You are taxing my patience.
Ryan, it's such a fantastic comic. It's just these four blocks, or no, six blocks. It's crazy.
Yeah, Google This Modern World and look for middleman this week debt limit debacle. And I love his, you know, I love middleman's costume.
Yeah.
Did you notice it's white?
It's white, yes. It's white. But, I mean, nothing's funnier than the way the Republicans are like, damn, you're too clever for us, little man. You know what I mean?
By half, says Orange Man.
And then they do exactly what we've been saying nonstop. It's like, we've tried to save the entitlements you rely on, but middleman insisted that they had to be slashed. Yes.
The callous fiend.
and then gas. Who could have foreseen this? Oh, it has to be kept. I may have to print this one out.
Yeah, I already did.
I mean, it's too good. It's just like,
it's on the wall.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to go there too, because it's crazy how just completely appropriate it is.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, the Star Trek email is rolling in, Sandra. You don't know what you started.
No!
In the alternate universe, Evil Kirk has no goatee. Evil Spock does. That from Randall.
Okay.
Yeah. Jack says, Spock's sex romp. Wasn't that the good time when he was on the planet with the spores that shot out of flowers?
I think so. But remember Home Chick had the fur. You know, the fur. Everyone had fur.
Yes.
Okay. That was...
I think that may have been America's first acknowledgement of the fuzzy furry fetish that exists somewhere deep in our undercurrent.
And then when Spock got away and back to whatever reality they're in, you know, it was all uncomfortable and he was all weird, but he knew what he did.
Yeah, and McCoy was right there to make sure he remembered.
Exactly. Oh God.
You green-blooded freak.
That was priceless. Those were just priceless, those episodes. Good night.
Well, you know, there's value having all this stuff stuck on brain cells that would otherwise be worrying about, you know, the impending doom.
Oh, I know. Well, listen, I mean, I have no idea what is going to happen with this whole debt thing. I'm assuming they'll raise it, but I think that so much damage has been done already. It really has. God, Lord.
Well, the damage was in the drama.
Yeah.
Because the fact that we can have this discussion and that there are like I said, you know, Dr. Bill is a man of great calm and self-restraint, and when I get a call from Dr. Bill saying, Bob, there's 250 freaks in the House of Representatives who have signed a pledge to Grover Norquist that overarches their constitutional oath or their representation of their constituency.
I mean, even Bill Clinton is saying, well, Obama should just raise the damn debt ceiling and cite the Constitution.
Yeah, and,
oh, shit.
Right, and do the and play the 14th Amendment card. Sadly, I did ask a couple of scholars during the PRISM Summer Academy about that, and they go, oh, God, I hope not. That'll just open up a can of worms. We'll never get the lid back on.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, listen, have a good evening.
You too, Sandra. Take care.
All right, bye.
Live long and prosper. You got to end with a live long and prosper, don't you? 24 minutes before the hour to the we continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Bob, it's Tracy, better known as Lady Cab Driver.
Oh, my God, Lady Cab Driver Tracy.
Hey, honey, how are you?
Oh, I'm so glad to finally get a chance to talk to you outside the Skype group.
Yes, I was unfortunately, I did not get a chance to check out your PRISM Academy because I was so busy working because, you know, I'm broke.
Yeah, it's a condition that's spreading to a lot of us.
It is, and the more I work, the more I'm in debt, and it's just like, really, it's just a vicious cycle. And then I'm listening to our, you know, the Chicken Littles with the, that the sky is falling about what President Obama is talking about doing, and I'm thinking, on one, because I'm not an Obama apologist. I am hotter than fish grease right now about the proposals that they're talking about cutting Medicaid and Social Security and Medicare while they're, and you know, that's even on the bargaining table when, what was it, a couple of months ago? I remember a press conference that the man, yeah, he stood up in front of the United, our citizenry and said, not on my watch, not while I'm president.
I think not on my watch is a direct quote, isn't it?
That's a direct quote. I was so proud of him at that point because I have been pissed off about it for the past, you know, year and a half. But when he said that night, I was like, all right, you know, brother man, it's like he had the 40 ounce, the OE 40 ounce and a Newport. And he was doing what, it was about to scare the white folks. And I'm like, okay, now this is the president that I voted for. And now, I don't know, dude, seriously?
Oh, no, you have so, have you seen that Tom Tomorrow comic?
No.
The one Sandra and I were talking about?
I was trying to look for it, but I'm old and slow. I'll be 45 on Thursday, so I don't type as fast as I listen.
Oh, stop it. Rub it in, why don't you? happy birthday just the same.
Thank you, honey. Thank you. I was so proud of him that night. I was like, and I even posted it on my Facebook page. Obama has drawn the line in the sand. He's tired of screwing around with, these crazy white folk in Congress, and he's going to get it done. But no. I'm like, dude, seriously, please don't make me call you Uncle Tom. Please. You know, I'm very disheartened, but I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep writing and calling people and saying, don't mess with my, because I'm personally, I have a disability, so I get a small amount of Social Security, but I still have to work, but I can only work a certain amount of time and a certain amount of hours. But the thing is, it's like they keep such a close rein on what I do as far as being a recipient for my entitlements that I paid into.
Right.
Why don't they keep such a close eye and scrutiny on these people, you know, like GE and didn't BP, who polluted the Gulf, get a freaking
and I can add insult to injury, too.
Add it, because the wound is already open. Go ahead and pour in more salt.
Yeah, and this, I mean, this stings real bad. I got this the other day in my email. Over the last 4 years, the Rupert Murdoch News Corp conglomerate earned $10 billion and received $4.5 billion in federal refunds after paying zero taxes.
I just fainted. You can't see me, but do you hear that loud thud?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I spend more time going running out this door screaming naked into the night than anybody even cares to think about. And that was one of them.
Yeah, because I remember reading about that, too. Because, you know, I'm...
They paid zero taxes.
No taxes.
And we rewarded them with a check for $4.5 billion.
And that's billion with a B.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some serious Jed Clampett folding around, walking around money.
Right. See, back in the day when Jed was a millionaire, you know, a couple of million was a big deal. That was 1960s money.
Yeah, did you notice they had to keep running up the amount of money through the course of the show. Because
right.
He just kept making more money. Yeah.
Right. But because, oh my God, I just broke out into a sweat. It's just like, you know, as much as I love this country, and you know, I like you were saying about that cartoon about how, you know, the president's, you know, back when he was born, seriously, his parents' marriage was against the law in how many different states?
Oh God, well, I mean, he's born before Loving versus Virginia is decided, so. Everything south of the Mason-Dixon line, and probably a bunch of Western states into the bargain.
Right. You know that. You know that. Because I'm a Californian, so we won't talk about the fact that the law was on the books. But if somebody pressed it hard enough, they would have probably brought it out just to say, you know, y'all can't. You know, you can't do that. You can't marry. You know, you can't marry a black man and being a white girl. Because I was talking about the other day when all this stuff was going on with Citizens United and all the stuff and the Walmart decision and all these things that our Supreme Court, who is now the court of corporate America, if these people had been on the Supreme Court back in the day, I'd still be a slave. I would be in jail because my son's father is white. I wouldn't be able to, and I would not be able to vote.
No, and even if you went to free territory, you still would be a slave.
I would still be a slave.
Yeah, I mean that's how I just kind of got dipped by the heel in how pernicious all of it was because we had several days of explaining just how hateful the Southern slavery was and became because you know one of the things in American history that I guess I kind of knew it but I hadn't had it you know put up right in front of my face yet was the fact that they go you know from the at the time of the Constitution they're like well you know but we got to have it.
We gotta have it.
And by 1860, it is the natural order of the universe and endorsed by Almighty God.
And, you know, that's one of the things with the three, you know, and that's what gave the southern states so much power because they didn't count black people as skilled humans, but three-fifths of a human being. So that gave them even more power. And the only, and, you know, people think that Lincoln freed the slaves because it was a right thing to do. It had nothing to do with right or wrong. It's about economics. And it was because the northern states were getting kicked, their asses kicked by southern states, and it's because they did not have the economic power that the southern states did because they had to pay northerners to do the work, whereas the southern states did not.
Oh, yeah, and just...
I'm just saying.
No, there, I mean, there was amazing stuff that I picked up along the way, like the Northwest Ordinance that dealt with Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, places like that.
At
that point in time, the South was like, no, make those non-slave states, okay?
Because
that was more flat land,
right?
And they didn't want plantations opening in what would become Wisconsin because they didn't want the competition.
Nope.
And so because of the three-fifths compromise, they get this disproportionate representation inside the House of Representatives, and they get disproportionate representation inside the Senate, and they have to maintain their Senate disproportionality through stuff like the Missouri Compromise, the Kansas-Nebraska Act, yada, yada, yada. And Jesus, it was ugly.
And I'm listening, you know, as with the history that, you know, I went back to school a couple of years ago, and my major I stopped going because of my illness, but my major is African-American and Women's History. And it tickles me that in both histories, black women are put to the back of the bus. you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you have, you know, during the suffrage movement, you have all these, you know, women fighting for the right to, now black men could vote, but black women, you know, a black man could vote before a white woman could. But then when the suffrage movement started and black women were trying to get the same rights as the white women were fighting for also, they didn't want to anger the southern white women, so they did not want to have black women in, you know, fighting for the cause also.
Oh, no, yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're well familiar with the first Seneca meeting.
We had Sojourner Truth and all that, and they wouldn't even let her speak.
No. And just the kind of stuff that you don't know how they don't manage to teach it in, you know, never mind college, you know, can we have a little bit of this in, you know, high school, please?
At least in high school. I mean, when I was in elementary school, I mean, at least there was some, but basically in elementary school, we were slaves. We were slaves. Abraham Lincoln freed us, and then there was Martin Luther King. That was it for black history.
Right, and
Harriet Tubman thrown in for good measure.
Well, you know, it's never been lost on me that Black History Month just happens to be the shortest month of the year.
Yeah, it used to be Black History Week.
Right.
And then we got 2 weeks, and then we finally got Black History Month, and we only get 28 days.
Yeah, but it damn sure ain't July.
Right.
It's not
July or any of the months that would have, you know, it would have been cool at least if it had been in June with Juneteenth and stuff like that.
Well, that would have made some sense.
That would have made some sense.
But you know, you talk about these, you know, these little known or not as known as they should be, Tracy, heroes of our history. One of the things that kind of I was listening to the radio on the way home, and it was the West Virginia version of public radio, and they were doing this story about a play that is being premiered at, I guess, the Shepherd College or Shepherd University Film Festival, which is a university here in West Virginia.
Okay.
And it's a play about American martyrs.
Okay.
Okay. So it's Nat Turner.
Right.
It's John Brown.
Okay.
I think either Sojourner Truth or Harriet Tubman are in there, maybe both of them. But then the thing that made me just about run off the road and into a light fixture.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Timothy McVeigh.
Okay.
Timothy McVeigh.
Excuse me, what?
Timothy McVeigh.
They called him an American martyr?
Yes.
What?
Who was willing to die and kill others for freedom.
For free...
Yeah, I know. See? I'm just glad you're not in your cab.
Seriously?
I wish I was lying.
Oh, well, she was not a martyr, but one of my favorite unsung heroes of black history or, you know, African American. Well, here's another thing. You know, I get questioned about being called African American, and I'm like, I'm not an African American. And they're like, why? You're black. I'm like, no, if you really want to break it down, I'm American of slave descent. I said, because see, I cannot trace my roots back to anybody in Africa, okay? I can only go back maybe 4 generations. I don't know where my family is from, and it's not that I don't care, but I don't have the money to go and get the DNA testing and all that to find out exactly what part of Africa my family may or may not have been from. But that does not matter to me, not that I care about what goes on in Africa, but I'm an American, damn it, that just happens to be black. And to tell me, you know, that to say that I'm an African American, to me it diminishes my being an American. You know, because Barack Obama, he's an African American. His father was actually African. Okay, my daddy was from, where was my father from? Missouri, you know, Jefferson City, Missouri.
Yeah, you're a Missouri American.
You're American. Okay, my mom was from Compton, California. American, okay? Like I said, the furthest I could go back is to my great-great-grandmother, and she was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. American. You know? Like I said...
Yeah, and you're not going to go spend your kid's inheritance finding out, what part of Africa you came from.
I'm not, because, you know, Alex Haley tried to do that, and, you know, and a lot of, from what I read and understand, a lot of that might have been fictionalized, go figure. You know, but let's just, you know, aside from Sarah Palin and that, you know, crazy as that shit, Michelle Bachmann, despite what they say, me and a whole lot of other black folk, we Americans. And no matter how much you want me to get back on the boat, get on the boat, fluff my hair out to an afro and put a bone through my nose, I ain't going to Africa. I ain't got no folks there that I can roll up and say, hey, old cuz, what's up?
Don't do that to me, Tracy.
What? What? What did I say?
No, no. I mean, you know, no. Just, you know, you said it. That means I won't get the hate mail.
I said it. Okay, I am a woman. I am black. You guys can look me up on Facebook. I'm as black as they come, you know. So he didn't say it. I said it. You know, I can't roll up in Africa and look up my people because I don't know where they from.
Yeah, that, you know? Well, I mean, truthfully speaking, that's about as silly as me going to Scotland and saying, you know, Lafayette, I am here.
Exactly. Dude, seriously? Seriously, you know, I would love to have Oprah money to be able to, you know, to trace my roots back to find out exactly where I'm from. I would just like to be able to find my family that is in America.
You know what? Ask the Mormons. They've probably already baptized your dead relatives, Tracy.
They probably did.
Not kidding. That's why they've got that you know, really intense genealogy thing, because they're baptizing all the dead folks. And you know, I don't know what would happen if I found out they'd done it to any of mine.
Well, let's not forget, speaking of Mormons, which Fox program on Sunday said that Mitt Romney wasn't a Christian?
No, that was Hermes. It was on Fox where Herman Cain said, Murfreesboro, Tennessee people have the right to tell Muslims that they can't build a mosque because their religion is legal too. But then he shows up at the Washington Times editorial board, and I can only imagine that when you go to the Washington Times editorial board, that, you know, there's clowns and balloons and popcorn and all kinds of crazy shit because, you know, that's the Mooney Times.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, only in the safe confines of the Washington Times does Hermie say, you know, Southern folks ain't gonna just get on board with a guy who thinks he's gonna be a god when he dies.
But then again, Herm, and you a Negro, okay? And there's probably folks still down south that refer to black people as Negro. You know, Mitt doesn't have a.
Oh, that's when they're being polite, Tracy. That's when they're being polite.
I'm not gonna say what I wanna say, you know, or what they are probably sitting around as they're hemming up their Confederate flag saying. You know, and they're probably chuckling, you know, drinking, swilling their moonshine in their devil wide going, Negro, please. If you don't think Mitt is going to get elected behind them, you think you're going to get elected darker than school.
Nope. Yeah. And by the way, you know, from the Star Trek conversation to this conversation, the things that engender responses on this program, I have learned not to try to predict. Just got an email in from Ron in Raleigh. He says, Henry Louis Gates. He says, when they did Dr. Gates' DNA, they found out his genealogy was predominantly Northern European.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
And remember...
My last name is Porter, okay? Not many black folks named Porter. Porter is basically an English last name. So I'm pretty sure there's some white folk blood in my blood. I'm, you know, like I said, my family's from the South. I'm just dark. But I'm pretty sure.
Well, you can, but see, that's the there's so much data out there, Tracy, that it's mind-boggling. For instance, the Southern accent, it would drive the folks who like to prance around in pillowcases crazy. But there's been tons of study that shows that the Southern accent is not. I mean, okay, the black Southern accent is not something that they picked up from white folks and mispronounced. The white Southern accent is an accent that they picked up from black folks, because there were more black folks speaking English in the South than there were white folks.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then that's the way language works.
Consideration with immigration and all the people who came from different countries to the South. You know, remember when slavery first started, I mean, slavery really didn't start off as slavery. It started off as indentured servitude.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it moved along and white folks couldn't handle the brutality, We had to get the story.
Well, I mean, look at the absolute origins of African slavery. It comes from the fact that when the Spaniards got here, that they couldn't work. The people who had lived here for the last 20,000 years said no.
We ain't having that.
No, we're gonna die. We're gonna die now.
We'll die before we even consider you enslaving us.
And the funny thing is that
we know how to fight, and we know how to keep ourselves alive, but we will die in captivity, and you won't have anybody to work these fields and the crops and stuff like that. Screw you on that, homie.
It worked that way from Massachusetts all the way to Mexico City, through two, three different cultures. The only ones who were marginally successful were the French, who just said, we'll marry your women and we're going to trade in beaver pelts and give you iron pots, rifles, and liquor. How's that?
And in the word of Dr. Phil, how's that working out for you?
Yeah, exactly. Now,
if other Americans, other than the people that in our chat room and talking, listening to your broadcast and your podcast, if somebody opened a textbook that was a history book that was not printed in Texas, and actually learned our history, and how intertwined we all are, and how it's never been about race, it's been about economics.
And
now I'm going to do the conspiracy thing on you when we talk about if, when Martin Luther King and Malcolm X both realized it's not about race, people, it's about economics, and it's about poor people forming together and coming against the moneyed interest. What happened to them?
Oh, they got dead.
They got dead.
Most anybody who does that gets dead. That is the most, you mentioned indentured servitude, Tracy. That's the most ancient on this continent, with white culture. That's the most ancient common denominator. You can't pick up Zinn's A People's History of the United States without having that, just right up in front of your eyeballs. That it's always been about making sure that there was a wedge between poor white folks and poor black folks, lest they both come together and realize they had a common enemy.
Well, it's like, have you ever heard of a book called, I'm trying to think, When the Irish Became White?
Yes.
Isn't that a fascinating book?
It's something that same symptomology is something that happens throughout all immigrant peoples.
Exactly.
SB 1070 in Arizona notwithstanding. If your name is Gutierrez or Gonzalez or Ramirez.
Jimenez, name is Jose.
Right, and you happen to live in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico before this frenzy started with these crazy white people driving down in their Winnebagoes to guard the border.
We got to keep those wetbacks out of our country.
We're gonna take our country back.
Hispanic people are just coming back to take what was theirs in the first place.
Well, yeah, I mean, whenever I hear some benighted cracker talking about we need an English language official language bill in fill in the blank Florida, Texas. Arizona, California. New Mexico, California. I lose my mind because I want to reach through whatever screen, interweb tube, grab a throat and go, what was the first European language spoken there? Because it's all Spanish.
It'll all be Spanish.
I mean, the first European language spoken in Alabama, and this is a great example, the first European language spoken in Alabama was Spanish.
Because who came to...
And then it was French.
And then it was French. And then you have on the East Coast, New York, New Amsterdam. And
Dutch. Yeah. There's whole vast chunks of the United States where English wasn't even the second European language.
No.
It was the third, the fourth.
At some point. Like I said, there we go again, because if you picked up a book and stopped watching faux news, maybe.
Yeah.
Just maybe you might learn something. But the thing is, you know, as much as I am pissed off at our president right now, I do feel bad for the man, because I remember a while ago I saw a picture or T-shirt is with George Bush's face, and it says, "Thanks for blaming the black guy."
Oh, I've got that T-shirt. It shows George Bush's face. It says, and it comes from BartCop.com. I screwed it all up, but thanks for blaming the black guy.
Right. And it's like, and like you said, had McCain, you know, been elected, we would not have a Tea Party because we would have a white guy in office. And it's, and it's,
And frankly, you know, all those teabaggers, Tracy, if the world, I mean, if the United States and for them and the world was going swirling down the drain and taking the teabagging types with them, they would go sit with their hands over their heart, wearing their Merkin flag shirts and singing God, Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA.
Oh, exactly. And you're trying to think, it's like, you know, me being, you know, I have had a taste of racism more than I care to remember. The first time I got my first dose of racism, I was in kindergarten. And I, as you probably know, I spelled my name, you know, with two E's. Well, that was my mom.
Right.
And so I had this old white woman. Now, when you're in the fifth grade, kindergarten. When you're in kindergarten, you're 5 years old, what are you learning how to do? You're learning how to spell your name. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so proud of myself that I'm spelling my name, right? Tracy. And so this white woman comes up and tells me, my kindergarten teacher, you're spelling your name wrong. That is not the way to spell Tracy. Now, what do you think I did? I went home crying to my mother. And my mother, who at the time, because my mom had me young, my mom and dad got married young. My mom was 16 when they got married, and my dad was 18, and I was not born. I was born not too long after. So I have this 21-year-old. Now, this is you know how there's certain things, that events that stick out into your mind and will never go away no matter how long ago it happened?
Oh, right, yeah.
Here is my mom, okay? She had on this green, like, mini dress, this, like, lime green mini dress, white, you know, hot pants and white go-go boots and an afro, right? So this is in 1971. She rolls up on that woman and you know, you don't you ever.
Oh, bless her heart.
Tell my baby anything. And to me, first of all, because my mom was raised, you know, to respect people, especially white people, right? But she attacked her baby.
Yeah. No, don't mess with the baby.
Do not mess with my baby. You know, and she went off on that woman to such a degree that I never had any more problems with that, ever. And then, you know, fast forward years later, I'm in the 11th grade, and I'm kind of smart. I have, you know, above average intelligence. So I was bused out to high school in the Valley, and I was like the only black kid in all the, especially coming from the, you know, inner city. I was in honors classes, and I was one of the few black kids in honors classes. So I, in 11th grade, I was the only black class kid in 11th grade honors English. And I had a teacher tell me that I did not belong there, that I was taking up space from a more deserving student.
Yeah, fill in the blank, white.
White. And you know what? And from that day forward, because I, you know, God destroyed me. And I didn't tell my mother about that until years later. But because of that one teacher, I had a fear of writing, of English, that transcended all reasonable, you know, rationality. I could not write. It took me until I went back to school 2 years ago and got a teacher who's like, "Oh my God, you can write. What do you mean you have writer's block? You are an amazing writer." But it's amazing how racism can take its toll on somebody. It just, I don't think white people can really truly understand what, as a, you know, a woman of color, what, how hard it is, you know, and I get tired of people, "Oh, you're just, oh, get over it," you know.
Oh.
I don't hear people telling, you know, too many Jews to get over the Holocaust, right?
Right.
But why is it that when a black person or a Hispanic person talks about some kind of injustice that happens on the real, on a regular basis, oh, you're just, you know, you need to get over it and move on. Why do I have to? It happened, and it's happening.
Well, see, you wouldn't have to get over it.
If it wasn't happening every single fucking day.
That, and if it wasn't, you know, the folks that are saying get over it's forebears who gave you something to get over in the first place.
In the first place. And here, you know, like I tell people all the time, you know, I kind of enjoy making white people uncomfortable. I know that's bad. Actually, no, it's not bad.
But no, it's not, frankly.
It's not bad. I have played on white guilt, you know, and I don't do it in a vicious way. I do it in a way that, you know, like when I wear my hair in locks, okay, and I always, every so often, I'll
oh, that's scary.
Line up on me wanting to touch my hair, right?
No, no.
And I'm like, how would you feel if I came up and petted your child? And they look at me and they're like, excuse me, what? I said, because you're asking me to touch my hair like my hair is some foreign thing. It's just hair styled differently than how you style your own.
And if you could, you would, because you
and
obviously
if you could,
dig
you
it.
You would,
yeah.
But you can't. You know, so no, you cannot touch my hair.
Well, see, there's white guilt, and there's at least white acknowledgement. You know,
right.
I got the privileged double whammy. I am white and male.
And male.
And I try to explain these things, for instance, to my kids, and say, you know, you don't have to walk around with a sign. You don't have to even be aware of it. But it is there for you in this culture. No matter how low on the social stratum you go as a white person, you're still white.
You're still white.
And there are doors that will be there for you that will not be there for others.
Ever. It's like, this is what my grandmother used to say to me, or say to people when they would harass her or say something. As long as I remain black and my ass points to the ground, you cannot talk to me that way. And so basically what's happening is, as long as I remain black and my ass points to the ground, I will never, even if I have Oprah money, because there are places where people don't know who Oprah Winfrey is. When Oprah, you know, as far-fetched and crazy they may be, but there probably are places where if Oprah walked into the room and they wouldn't see Oprah Winfrey, who would they see? They would see a black woman before they even knew who Oprah Winfrey.
You know what? You remind me of a story, and I believe it to be true, back during the days of the Bush administration, Tracy, when Condoleezza Rice walked into the jewelry counter at, say, you know, Saks.
Or Neiman. Or,
yeah, right. It probably was Neiman.
Short high-end store.
And she was real nasty to the woman behind the counter, because she said, she asked to see some stuff, and the woman started laying stuff out on the counter, and she said, don't you know who I am? I don't want to see that cheap shit. You put out the good stuff.
And why should she know who she, and, you know, unless you know who Condoleezza Rice is?
Yeah, you know what? If you're working three jobs and one of them is the jewelry counter at Needless Markup.
Exactly.
You probably don't know.
You don't know because you don't have time to turn on the TV and watch Condoleezza Rice kiss George Bush's ass. You know.
Did you ever see that clip of her with the Freudian slip of all time?
No, I might have, but remind
No, there's it was out there. It is absolutely unforgettable. Now here she is. She's the Secretary of State. Maybe she was still just National Security Advisor. Depends, first or second term.
Right.
But she's describing something that a conversation that she had with George.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Well, you know, I told my husband, I mean the president."
I remember that. I remember that. I didn't see the actual, you know, clip, but I remember hearing about that.
And you know, I imagine that Laura was eating Librium and drinking tequila, like M&M's and Kool-Aid that night.
Well, if you know,
Lupe, bring me another Vicodin.
You know. Vicodin. When it comes, you know, like I tell people all the time, you know, there's no way of me getting around being black, you know, and I can speak firsthand on black self-loathing, and I brought this up in many chats of how, you know, growing up in 1960s and 1970s America, I saw nothing that any really seriously positive African American, you know, black influence, especially women, you know. So the only thing I saw was Ginger Rogers and Shirley Temple and all these beautiful blonde, blue-eyed white women, right? So what did I want to be? I didn't want to be some dark-skinned, nappy-headed black girl from South Central, you know? I wanted to be the golden-haired child. I used to run around. You remember back in the day those shawls that we used to wear with the fringes on them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think even Whoopi Goldberg, when she did her first one-woman show, did a bit about, you know, pretending that she had long hair by putting something like a towel or a shawl or something on her hair to make her pretend like she had long, flowing hair. The only thing I could think of is if I ever had a child, I would not marry a black man. Because I did not want my child to go through what I went through growing up because I was dark-skinned with short, nappy hair. Do you know how horrible that is? Can you imagine?
That's all I can do is imagine.
That's all you can do is imagine. And the reason why I felt this way, because I didn't have anybody to look at like Oprah Winfrey or Michelle Obama.
That's like talking with Sandra a few minutes ago, who, by the way, wrote in during our conversation, and she said, I agree, I prefer black or middle-aged Negro.
Exactly.
But
I'm not African, and I will never be an African.
But, you know, we just in the course of our vacuous Star Trek conversation, you know, we brought up the Uhura kiss.
I love that show. That, you know, I wrote in the chat room, Star Trek premiered the year I was born, 1966. And like you said, it was the first, you know, interracial kiss on television. And like you said, it had to be. It wasn't because Kirk was a hoe. Because Kirk was a straight-up hoe.
But.
You know, they didn't have to force him to kiss the green woman.
No.
A curse or spell or any kind of alien force thing on him to kiss the green people and the women with horns and all that. But you have to kiss a negress.
Okay, let's do that one then. Do you remember the episode where Abraham Lincoln came back to life and looked at Uhura and said, "What a lovely negress you are." Yeah, oh yeah, and in a minute I'll have 15 emails telling me the name of that episode.
Yes, you will.
There's, while we're on this, I mean, this is pop culture, and this is beautiful, because, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, but only by about 3 years.
A couple of years.
Yeah, and...
Wait, Murdoch, somebody attacked Rupert Murdoch during the hearing?
Say what?
I'm watching the news. And I guess while Rupert Murdoch was talking in front of Parliament, he got somebody attacked him.
They throw a shoe at him or something?
I don't know if they threw a shoe.
Oh, what a beautiful thing.
Oh, what a beautiful thing. Do you think now after he gets brought down, do you think the Koch brothers are next?
Oh, I wish. I wish. You know, I'm doing my part. I won't buy their toilet tissue or their paper towels.
Yeah, see, and somebody told me about that. I was in over the weekend. I'm pretty sure you guys. He slapped. This man just lunged from the crowd and slapped Murdoch, and then somebody slapped the guy who slapped Murdoch.
Oh well, as soon as the show's over, I'm off in search of a clip. I want to hang on to this one.
It's on CBS News here in L.A.
If there's any justice, there was at least a little spit flu.
Some spit will have to go, too. But what I'm thinking about is when I was, oh, my God, I lost my train of thought. Oh, Jesus, that just...
Well, we were talking, I said I'm a little bit older than you, but...
You know, and so go ahead. And
well, no, what I was, you know, while we're talking about all this pop culture stuff, I remember, you know, because long about first grade, whatever, there were two seminal TV events that some of the more enlightened people who were teachers in my school told the little white children to watch.
Okay, and those were?
Julia.
Right, yeah, with Diane Carroll.
Right, because, you know, it was... The enlightened ones actually wanted us to see that, you know, that there were careers and real people doing, you know, and
other
because
things
that,
other
right
things took us, right,
yeah, and then I guess what, third, fourth grade, the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman comes along
with Cicely Tyson,
right.
Oh, and speaking of Diane Carroll, I got a little, you know, years ago, back when she first got on Broadway, and I forget what show it was, and, you know, Diane Carroll, stunningly beautiful woman.
Yes.
And still is stunningly beautiful. She was in some show, and, I wish I could remember the name of the show, but it was her and Pearl Bailey and some other people. And so a white woman comes backstage and invites the entire cast of the show to her house because she was just so impressed with the show, except for Diane Carroll.
No.
And you know why she did not invite Diane Carroll to the show?
No.
Not to the show, but to her home, was because it would confuse her children, because they've never seen a black woman, you know, presented in such a way.
See, Julia was a real problem, because at that time, you know, little white boys would look at each other out on the playground and go,
"What the?
She's real pretty.
She's real pretty. She's black, but..."
And we weren't sure if we could say that.
Out loud.
Right. And you're not going to ask your daddy about that, and you're not going to ask your mama.
No.
And so, you know, the kids will figure out sex, but that was one that was tougher. That was tougher.
Yeah.
Because
Carol was stunning.
Yeah, I dropped
and
dead.
Then you had, you know, and then you had I Spy with the very cool and very young Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah.
Who has lost his mind. But my favorite, you know.
Nice postscript there.
Iconic black figure in the media is the one and only time that Sidney Poitier did not have to play the noble Negro. In the heat of the night.
Yeah.
When he slapped the crap out of that white man.
They call me.
Well,
yeah.
I asked my mom, because, like I said, my mom grew up in L.A., and so I forget what year this was, like early 60s, and I'm pretty sure it was before I was born. I think the movie came out in like 64 or 65 or something like that. And I asked her, what was the reaction of the audience after that scene, and she said it was complete bedlam.
Yeah. Oh, there were places in the South where that film was not allowed to be shown.
Now they showed the movie, but they cut that scene out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have no Negro slapping no white man on the picture screen.
No. No, and it, no.
No, you know, and we're still talking. I can't, you know, as much as crap that I talk about what I would or would not do had I been born back then, I don't know. You know, I like to think that I would not have been, you know, just letting people push me around. But then again, how could
now,
I
see,
not
this? Okay. Now, I said a little bit ago, all I can do is imagine. This is the one place where I get to say, no, I can get right there with you. Because I've talked on this program before. I can call up right now on this computer a photograph of a Klan rally in which the guy who has the Grand Wizard regalia is my grandfather. Okay?
Ooh.
And you do that kind of thing. You know, you say, okay, all right, it's 1921.
Right.
And I'm living in this community.
And you
want to say, well, hell no, I wouldn't have anything to do with that.
But you want to.
But
can you?
Right. Could you? Would
you?
Yeah. I'm.
Do you think you could, like in my case, could I have been an Ida B. Wells? you know?
Yeah.
Could I have been a Harriet Tubman? Would I have had the gumption or the intestinal fortitude to have been one of those women?
And you know, that's the tough call that we all face, Tracy, as we approach history. You know, maybe the teaching of that is, and we'd best be careful doing the kind of thing that you and I are talking about, but the thing you take away from it is not so much that as it is going forward, make sure that we always teach the next generation, don't necessarily go along to get along. And I live in a culture here in Appalachia where the easiest thing in the world for me to do would be to put a Friends of Coal sign in my yard, festoon my rusty red pickup truck with Friends of Coal stickers, and you know what? Nice things might happen.
Exactly.
But I can't do that.
I cannot be, you know, because like I said, 20 years ago when I had that, you know, like my black self-hatred was so deep and so grounded in my soul that my son thought I would never, like I said, never consider being with a black man. But to the point that my son's father is white. How, you know, and so I can see the Herman Cain's and, you know, like I go into these things about, you know, because I get into these discussions with my customers, you know, especially right after Michael Jackson passed away, you know. And they're like, well, why do you think he, you know, made himself to look so white? I said, because.
Yeah, because, you know, you're the expert.
Yeah, well, see, because I am, like, I was the expert of all
yeah, that's like going to.
And right. That happens.
It's like going to a Native American and asking him how to count cards because, you know, there's Indian casinos out there.
Exactly. But basically what I think, but I don't tell them what, I don't know what they expect for me to say, but I'm like speaking, I said, you know, Michael Jackson was only a few years older than me. He, you know, would have been, he died, so he would have been 52 this year if he was still alive. And he grew up the same, basically the same time period that I grew up, not seeing anything great about being black.
But you know what? He also had something something other weird going on in his world.
Yeah, with his crazy ass father.
Well, okay. Let's just extend that a little further. He had that whole Jehovah's Witness thing going on.
Yeah, that too. But which kills me about the, you know, the whole thing with the Jehovah's Witness thing, with all the surgeries that he had, isn't that against Jehovah, you know, to...
No, as long as he didn't have a transfusion.
Oh, he didn't have a transfusion. Okay, so we had the whole Jehovah's Witness thing going, we have the crazy father thing going, and then we have black self-loathing. Because if you listen to, like, interviews with Quincy Jones, they talk about Michael Jackson and how he didn't like black people, which tickled me. It's like, what color is Quincy Jones' wife? I'm just
saying,
not being too fond of black folks, but your wife is white, so really you really can't talk about, you know, Michael Jackson. But we have, and I know, like I said, myself included, of a whole generation, generations of black people who the only thing they wanted to be was white because white was right. You got people, you know, who used back in the day who used to pass for white.
Oh. Absolutely, and yet, you know, this one seminal thing happens. I think the book was first written in like 1948. It's published by 1952 or something. And you know, little white boy growing up in Alabama, I first read the book when I was 15 years old. It was probably a terrible mistake for my parents to let me own it. I read Jack Kerouac's On the Road.
Oh, okay, a book that I've never read, but I've always wanted to read it.
It was stunning to me. Because I know exactly what you're talking about, you know, with passing. Well, Lena Horne, you know.
Right.
My dad had told me her, because he so admired her and just thought she was the most beautiful woman that ever breathed. Stunning. And you know, explained some of that to me. And so then, you know, around age 15, age 16, I get my hands on the Road, which is just mind-blowing anyway. But there's a passage where Kerouac winds up in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on the one hand, you know, he's pals with Allen Ginsberg, who's, you know, writing Howl and talking about wandering through the Negro streets. You know, that line's in there. Well, in the Denver passage of On the Road, there's a passage where where the Kerouac character is wandering, and he wanders into the tenements and the slums of Denver.
Right.
And he talks about hearing all the music coming out of windows and bars and so forth. And he talks about, you know, just the whole vibe of the thing. And there's this passage where Sal says, "And at that point in time, I wanted to be anything but what I was, boring and white."
Well, you know that Langston Hughes poem, "Everybody wants to sing my blues, but no one wants to live my blues."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Sandra offering up this, she says by email, "Unfortunately, if I lived in apartheid America, I probably would have been Phyllis Wheatley."
And you got to explain, for your listeners who do not know who Phyllis Wheatley was. Phyllis Wheatley was born into slavery, and she was, you know, basically, I don't know if she was bought or taken, because she was very sickly. She could not, you know, work in the fields and stuff like that. And she basically wrote in her she wrote poetry saying how great it was that she had basically how white people taking care of her, and it wasn't so bad being a slave.
That's her in a nutshell. 1753 to 1784.
Right. That'd be Miss Wheatley. You know, and so you have, it's the brainwashing has been going on.
Yeah, well, I've got a little chunk of poetry here. Shall we share it?
Share on because you have to read it to have other people hear it, because they're not going to believe it. But please do read it.
This is a poem on being brought from Africa to America.
Right.
But she wasn't brought from Africa to America. She was born here. Right.
She was born here, Massachusetts. Right.
I think so. Yeah. But she says, "'Twas mercy brought me from my pagan land, taught my, yeah, I know, it's tough to get through, isn't it?
Okay, I won't laugh. Yeah. I'll let you read
well,
it.
Well, no, I may, okay? Although I got no business. 'Twas mercy brought me from my pagan land, taught my benighted soul to understand that there's a God and that there's a Savior, too. Once I redemption neither sought nor knew. Some view our sable race with scornful eye. Their color is a diabolic dye. Remember, Christians, Negroes, black as Cain, may be refined and join the angelic train." It's that line about "may be refined."
Yeah.
That drives me a little bit crazy. Because
just
it's
a little.
Well, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, and I grew up being taught, you know, all the white folks' stories. You know, another one of those I can't live down moments is the fact that one of my multi-great ancestors, right at and before the Civil War, was an absolute fire and brimstone pro-slavery preacher. You know, so and nobody has more power in this kind of culture than the preacher. And he went around from Sunday to Sunday to Sunday. You know, he could smell a chicken frying from 50 miles away. You know how it is with preachers. They ain't going to work to eat.
Yes.
They're just going to eat. And so he stood in pulpits and told his Methodist congregations that it was the universal design of Almighty God that slavery and used all the verses from Paul's letters to slaves, obey your masters, all that's right. And so, you know, I can.
It's like, you know, I had a while ago, I had posted something on Think Progress about, you know, yet another article about, you know, using Christianity as an excuse to hate gay people. And me being a Christian, and I love the Lord, He heard my cry and pitied every moan, because trust and believe that if I didn't have, you know, and yes, you know, I get my folks say, you know, that's a slave religion and blah, blah, blah. That religion was used to keep, you know, people in slavery. And I'm like, yeah, but it isn't now. So, you know, I have an issue, because especially when people use Jesus as a defense to do evil and say evil. And you being a recovering Southern Baptist, you know what I mean.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if you're an atheist, you know, whatever, I don't care. But don't you, because I have a feeling that if Jesus was kicking it around. If you read the Bible and listen and read his teachings, all these people screaming about they're good Christians, not so much. If you're talking about cutting Medicaid and cutting all these programs to help the poor and disadvantaged, what kind of Christian can you be?
Not much of one if you're paying attention.
How much of a Christian, and then these people, here's one of the things I was and I'm so glad I thought about it. You know how with the trickle-down economics that I'm still waiting, I feel like I've been tinkled on, not trickled down, and I'm still waiting for something to trickle down into my pocket. And one of the main things that they were saying that if you allow more tax cuts and whatnot and so forth, then rich people will donate to charity and that would free up more money. But here's the problem.
Oh, and they're going to create jobs, too.
They're going to create jobs, too. But here's
minimum wage ones.
With charity. You know how they say charity begins in the home, but if there's no charity in your heart, how can it begin in the home? But then again, there's all these charitable programs, like the Catholic Church, the Salvation Army, and whatnot and so forth, which are great programs and stuff like that. But what happens if I'm a gay black person that needs help from any of these programs? Are they going to help me?
No, because remember that fine, upstanding Christian Michelle Bachmann and her husband say that they're...
I'm a barbarian.
Yeah, barbarian and need of discipline.
Just would love to discipline me if I was a strong black buck with some chaps on. Oh.
Assless. Don't forget the assless part.
The assless chaps.
Yeah, right. Now, just to go back for a minute to Phyllis Wheatley, one of the things that drives that strikes me about her story is how she was sickly,
really?
And she died alone, 31 years old. Her infant son died 3.5 hours after her death. I'm just looking at her bio. She wound up in that position because where she had been kept before, she was driven into labor as a scullery maid. Only because, Tracy, because her husband, John Peters, was imprisoned for debt in 1784.
Privatizing a prison, shall we?
Now here we go. I mean, let's just get this squared up. She was in the United States of America, and
mm-hmm.
her husband was imprisoned for debt in 1784. We're not talking about the king's rule here.
No.
We're talking about land of the free and home of the brave now.
Of the not-so-brave.
Yeah.
So here we go. Now, you're talking about debtor's prison. And then you hear about those... There's a couple of states now that are allowing creditors to put people in jail if they haven't paid on their credit card bills.
Yeah.
And notice how they're private prisons?
Oh. Yeah. that was a funny statistic from a couple of weeks ago. Private prison revenues are up, and yet the populations are they're not skyrocketing at the same way that the profits are.
No.
So that means if populations are holding about even, but profits are going up,
we're going to have to start putting more people in jail.
We've got to get more people in jail, and it also means that the profits have gone up because whatever passes for services to the inmates have been cut because there's just no appreciable margin on the private prison industry. You make your money in the difference between imitation American pasteurized processed cheese food product made with vegetable oil versus something actually made with milk.
With milk, exactly. And so here you have... And, of course, the disproportionate amount of people in jail are black men. And here's another book. Have you ever heard of this book called The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness?
Yes. Yes, I have. One of the things, and it goes back to previous conversations, is that, you can't talk about being a liberal in America, I don't think, and really have any kind of credibility without having an earnest discussion of the prison industrial complex.
Exactly.
And the phrase that I use on this program, and this is your first call and everything, but it's wonderful. The phrase that I use, Tracy, is that America has a punishment fetish.
They do.
And I don't mean
not like
David Vitter and his diapers and stuff. I mean, it's really sick, twisted, and way down into the ground, because and it comes from all that Puritan Calvinism and all that evil stuff that says, as long as I got somebody to point to and say their world is crap, I can look at my own and say, there but for the grace of God go I.
Go I. And that goes back down to the wars and keep not the wars but keeping you know that divide. Keeping poor black people, poor white people, against poor black people.
Right. You know, and you know that's what the Tea Party is. That's what Fox News is. My God, I've got a. Let me see if I can find it here. This is a beautiful couple of moments. I got a video today from Texas. Okay.
Right.
This is a news story. It has to do with the housing bubble. But there's a very upset neighborhood. Let me see if I can just get the audio to run here, because this is too beautiful. Chris, who's known as Psychoticus Rex in the chat room, sent this along, and it is a dandy. He said, "Can you spot the racism, Bob?" And I'm kind of good at it. Here we go.
Without a mortgage, a man in Flower Mound has done it. Moved into a $300,000 house, and he only paid $16 to do it. It's a little-known Texas law, and the foreclosure mess could have him living on Easy Street, but his neighbors, well, they're less than thrilled. Channel 8's Casey Norton has this exclusive from Flower Mound.
Flower Mound's Waterford Drive is lined with well-manicured $300,000 homes. So when a new neighbor moved in without the usual sale, mortgage-paying homeowners had a few questions.
What paperwork is it, and how is it legally binding if he doesn't legally own the house? He just squats there.
Lee Lowry and her husband told me the house down the street was in foreclosure for more than a year. The owner walked away, then the mortgage company went out of business. Apparently, that opened the door for someone to take advantage of the situation. Kenneth Robinson told us he's no squatter. He says he moved in on June 17th after months of research about a Texas law called adverse possession.
This is not a normal process, but it's not a process that's not known. It's just not known to everybody.
Robinson says this piece of paper gives him rights to the house. It's an online form he printed out and filed at the Denton County Courthouse for $16. It says the house was abandoned and he's claiming ownership.
I went through, looked at it, and added some things here, for my own protection.
The house is virtually empty, just a few pieces of furniture, no running water or electricity. But Robinson says just by setting up camp in the living room, Texas law gives him exclusive negotiating rights with the original owner. If the owner wants him out, he would have to pay off his massive mortgage debt, and the bank would have to file a complicated lawsuit. Robinson believes neither is likely, so if he stays in the house after 3 years, he can ask the court for the title.
That's your goal eventually, is to have title of this home, to be
absolutely
the owner of this home?
Absolutely.
And
on a record, at this point, since I possess it, I am the owner of the home.
Robinson posted no trespassing signs after neighbors asked police to arrest him for breaking in. But Flower Mound officers say they can't remove him from the property because home ownership is a civil matter, not criminal. Lowry and her neighbors continue to look for legal ways to get him out.
Or if he wants the house, buy the house like everyone else had to. Get the money, buy the house.
Robinson says he's not buying anything. As far as he's concerned, the $330,000 home is already his, and he has the paperwork to prove it. Casey Norton, Channel 8 News.
Don't you just love that? Let him get the. If he wants to live in the house, let him borrow the money like the white people did.
Kate is mad because he found a loophole. It's like,
Right,
all the time about OJ. White folks just got mad because the Negro got away with killing a white woman. He was one of the first black people that used to just bought his freedom in the justice system like white people have been doing
all the time. Yeah, because, I watched that news story, and Tracy, it reminded me of those disparate photos from Hurricane Katrina. Remember the ones where the white folks were foraging for food, but the black folks were looting?
They're looting.
And see, now this is
I'm hungry too. So because I'm black, that means I'm a remember what were they calling them, refugees?
Yeah, yeah. And so
they
this guy
people refugees, did they?
there would be news stories about this dude and what a wily, savvy, sharp character he was for finding this loophole. If he was a white man, but he's not white, so therefore he's squatting.
He's a squatter. He's a trespasser. He's an interloper. You know, he's a Negro in a lily white neighborhood, and we can't have that, can we?
Oh yeah, and you know the video doesn't translate very well to radio, Tracy. But there's a precious little scene there where they first go to interview the white folks, and they're all sitting around there in their day room next to the billiard table.
Right. Well, it's the same mentality when, you know, like I said, I grew up, I live in L.A., I live in the Valley now, but, you know, I live some of my part of my life in South Central, and that's another story that's a pretty good one, but it's the same thing when I turn on the news, and I don't normally watch the news because it makes my head explode, and when they scour an entire neighborhood, and they seem to find the one black person that still wears the Jerry Curl and has a gold tooth to interview.
they've got special NASA developed detectors for that, Tracy.
They do. It's like, you know, they got the GP, you know, it's like Google Earth. You know.
Well, you know, but you know what? Oh, right. You know, no, because it happens here whenever when Diane Sawyer wanted to come down and do her special expose, special report from ABC News about health problems in Appalachia, she managed to find, you know, folks with meth mouth.
Right. You know, and that's
And never mind. And even if it wasn't meth mouth, it was actually probably caused by the toxic waste that comes from the coal industry. But Diane Sawyer comes away and says, around here, they call it Mountain Dew mouth because these hillbillies give their babies Mountain Dew in their bottles in the cradle.
Did she really say that?
No, not as a quote, but no, I mean, no, she didn't call them hillbillies. She didn't call them hillbillies, but yeah, she said that.
Wow, because they get, and so it's one of those things where, you know, you cross generalize, you get that one person. And that speaks for the entire community. Like, you know, when people ask me how I felt about OJ being, you know, getting off, I said, well, he's only done what white folks have, like I said, I do not mince words with white people because they don't want to they're not going to mince words with me, and I'm probably the least politically correct person ever. And I don't care if I offend you because, see, you have, you know, white people have been offending black people and anybody of color for hundreds of thousands of years. So excuse me if I hurt your feelings. But like when, you know, I was like the only black person at my job. We were watching the verdict. And, of course, when he got off, you know, they're like, well, what do you think? I said, well, he's only doing what white folks have been doing for hundreds of years.
The fact of the matter was what he did, And you know, this is something I beat on quite a lot around here. What he did was something that rich people do.
Rich people. I'm sorry.
You know, it's not the black folks. It's not the white folks. It's the green folks. It's the folks with all the green.
I forget. You know, like going back to how the Irish became white. It's the same thing. They were still considered, you know, trash, but they were now better than the black people. But the money class still didn't let them get to that, you know, to make money,
yeah,
and be part of the money class.
That's why that phrase was developed, Tracy. You know, poor
white
trash.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. See, he did what somebody with money has been able, up until that point, there hasn't been a lot of black men with that kind of money that was accused of such a crime. That could have gotten, you know, he had enough money and resources to get up.
Yeah,
while I can't
profess complete understanding of issues of race, you know, I am kind of proud of the fact that I managed to raise enough of a stink that people are, there's a little bit of outrage going on around here in my neck of the woods because of the coal industry.
Right.
A study came out a couple of weeks ago that shows that, for instance, a woman in Appalachia who is carrying a baby, who's pregnant, and smokes, has a 17% greater chance of having a baby with a birth defect. You know, because there's warnings on the side of the package.
Right, there's warnings and stuff like
right.
that.
Well, if that same woman doesn't smoke but lives in an area that has mountaintop removal next to it, she's 42% more likely.
And there's no warnings on the water, is there?
No. And there's another statistic where she's 118% more likely. Okay. The coal industry is, in many ways it exactly parallels and mirrors the racial bigotry, because the coal industry's very, very white law firm that touts its diversity, by the way.
Because they have white women on staff.
Bingo. There were two of them on this news release.
As quiet as is kept, white women benefited more from affirmative action than black people ever will. But go ahead.
Yeah. So they put out a news release, and they say, well, this study is clearly scientifically invalid because, among other things, this study did not take into account consanguinity in Appalachia.
Say who?
Yeah, they said the study wasn't valid because Appalachian people, a bunch of inbred hillbillies.
Oh, is that what that meant? Okay, because thank you, because, you know, I did go to college, but, you know, English was not, you know.
No. Consanguinity is a $10 word for a cheap 10-cent joke.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, hillbillies can't help getting it on with a sister.
Oh, yes. You know, a mama, sister, a brother, cousin.
Yeah, you know, they tell jokes like in Appalachia, when there's a divorce, are they still brother and sister after it's over? You know, that kind of crap. But there's a firestorm on now.
I've heard some pretty bad, you know, hillbilly jokes, and like you grew up in the South, so you got hillbilly jokes, and I'm pretty sure I can't even imagine the black jokes that you have heard.
Oh, no, let's don't and say we didn't.
In the 50 some odd years that you have graced this fine green earth, but it's just, you know, when you think about how sad and pathetic it is, how when people, you know, when they joke about and use such denigrating denigrating language for what you're talking about, you know, basically calling you guys a bunch of inbred hillbillies and that you're too stupid to know what's going on, but you're not.
Oh, no, we know what's going on, and there's some of us is raising a bit of a ruckus about it, and it's causing real problems, for our betters.
Well, and that's, you know, and it's the same thing about what's going on now, and back to, you know, how the call first started about what's going on with, you know, the threatened cuts to Medicaid and whatnot and so forth, and, you know, taking away, you know, like I said, I'm on Medicaid.
Oh, how much of what it is that's going to hit the fan if everything falls apart? This state, by the time you factor in WIC, AFDC,
right,
food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, Title II Social Security Disability, and SSI, by the time you factor all of those in, probably something in excess of 60% of the population of my state, Tracy.
Just your state alone.
Just my state it's like that in a lot of other south of Mason-Dixon line states.
California included. And what they said, like you said, with that 60% of people who cannot go to the grocery store now.
And you know, but you know what? There's an up.
Talk about these entitlements.
There's an upside to that.
And food stamps. They are still bringing money into the economy.
Bingo. You let that food stamp money not come into people's pockets at the first of the month, where Walmart gets its monthly bump, and
yes,
and the CEO of Walmart will pick up the phone and will call Mitch McConnell, and will
exactly
call Cantor, and will
exactly
call John Boehner and say, make it happen yesterday.
Make it happen now. Because
we're not fooling around anymore.
Because people, you know, when they talk about these entitlement programs and stuff like that, and the word entitlement makes my stomach churn, they are putting money into the economy more so than any of the banksters, any of these CEOs, and there's, you know, all this money that they're hoarding. They're not putting back into the economy.
They seem to forget this money is actually a dynamic economic engine.
Huge.
And they're blinded by their hatred. They're blinded by their prejudices, their bigotries.
You guys have, because we have, I guess, California is one of the last states to do this, but we have EBT cards where you can use it instead of food stamps. And now they put not only your food stamp benefits on the card, but also your cash benefits.
Right.
So not only can you use this, these cards at the grocery store, now you can use them at the gas station. You can use them at the...
Right, and here's another one of those little economic factors. You can use it at the ATM.
And at the ATM.
And you can get charged $3 by the bank every time you use it.
And that's going into the bankster's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, and I know most of your listeners know that they made, are you ready, $7 billion with a B just on ATM charges last year?
Yeah. Yeah. Billion.
That's just ATM charges.
And they want, and you know, and they want to run it up. They want those
that's
fees to be
ATM
high.
ATM charges. They want to get, because more people are getting, are using, you know, debit cards.
Oh, and by the way, I got to give you an update. Darlene wrote in, Tracy, and she said, from what I saw and heard, this goes back to the Murdoch thing, from what I saw and heard, some young guy got into the hearing room and threw a pie at Murdoch, ruined his expensive suit jacket. Murdoch's wife, who is rather young, about a quarter of Murdoch's age, lunged at the guy and attacked him. Looks like she beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, she did. She had on like a pink Chanel suit or something.
Jesus.
You know, she wanted to make sure that he didn't get killed before, you know, just in case there was something happening with that will.
Yeah, that's going to be as much fun as that as the will fight over what's her name there with the
Anna Nicole Smith.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you for
That's a whole that you know talk about that poor girl, and she, you know, the fact that she married that man and did probably ungodly, speakable things to make that man happy, she deserved every dime that he left her, and then some.
Made his withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave.
Okay, it's like, dude, seriously, all this still goes back to greed. It's like...
Right, and it goes, I mean, you know, I could tell you the story, we're running out of time, but I could tell you the story, look her up, a woman named Ann Royal. She's kind of the patron saint of this program. She was America's first blogger before there was even so much as a telegraph. She was the first muckraker. She compelled Congress to fund the newfangled telegraph. She wound up in the position she was in because she had to get out and hit the road and start writing for a living because she had been cheated out of her inheritance from what she had done for an old white guy. She was a white woman, but still, it's an amazing story, and she's worth looking up. Hey, Tracy, this has been wonderful, but I have got
this
to roll.
Has been awesome, but I know we got to go, but I'm so glad that I finally got to talk to you voice to voice, and I am looking forward to calling into the show again if you have me.
Oh, we'll have you. We'll have you. You take care.
You are awesome, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.
I do too, and you drive careful now. If I'm ever in LA, I'm requesting.
You call me and come pick you up.
I'm requesting your cab specifically.
No,
you know when I'm in Vegas, I get Tony's cab. When I get to LA, I get Tracy's.
You better call me, baby, because I will hunt you down, and I'm telling, and beat you like a red-headed, freckle-faced white child.
That I already am. Tracy, you take care, dear.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Love those first calls. And let's see if anybody hung on, stayed with. That was, you know, that what you just heard was an example of what conversation radio means. For those of you who didn't get in this evening, my apologies. But this is about expanding the conversation. And it's dynamic and magic. And it's, you know, we kiddingly have our Friday on the front porch and things like that. But front porch conversation is really where it kind of has to be and what it has to be about if we're going to get anywhere and get back to anything. Because ideas presented 20 seconds at a clip are, they're no way to run a country, and they're no way to establish a dialogue. And I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Be back tomorrow night, and I hope you will be as well. And it's, you know, like I said Friday night, it's good to be home. It's good to get back into the swing of things. You know, just as one last reminder of how hateful and ugly these right-wing bastards can be, I hope the audio comes through on this. Because at the same time that there will be a hearing tomorrow about repealing DOMA, which is just a hateful thing in the first place, you know the foo-frog that's been caused in the Republican Party with some people signing on to the Family Leaders Pledge that demands that they refer to homosexuality as a choice. And about, you know, marriage being between one man and one woman. And, well, the family leader, the leader of the family leader is a clown by the name of Bob Vander Plaats. It is nothing for him to compare same-sex marriage equity to polygamy and to incest. He just hasn't quite gotten around to pulling a Santorum and referring to it as bestiality. They preach that homosexuality is a public health risk. Well, we're going to Sherman's going to set the Wayback Machine for March of this year. The place is Audubon, Iowa, and it's just a just some white folks sitting around talking, bigoted, prejudiced, homophobic, hate-filled, so-called Christian white folks. It's Bob Vander Plaats talking about marriage equity in Iowa, talking about how Iowa is now the butt, ha 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 ha, of jokes because Iowa's state Supreme Court declared same-sex marriage to be legal. Well, when they think nobody's watching, the bigots, just like racists, The homophobic bigots, just like racists, will let their hair down, so to speak, and tell people things and say things to one another that they would not be caught dead saying in public. And this is one of those incidents. Hang on just a sec. Now, see, this is Bob Vander Plaats speaking. And like I said, the audio is low. But he says people are calling from all over the country and saying that Iowa is the butt of jokes. Okay, now wait for the bastard to kick in. Ho, 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 ho. Hey, you know what my wife says? You know, Mr. Pasty-Faced Doughy and White Guy here doesn't even have the guts to own this joke. He said, you know what my wife says? She says, Iowa, the place where you can't smoke a fag, but you can marry one. Ho, 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 ho. And you heard all the laughter. The talk is low and tough to get on the audio, but the laughter comes through loud and clear. Ho, ho, ho. The place where you can't smoke a fag, but you can marry one. Ho, 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 ho. And then Bob Vander Plaats. Oh, shoot. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good one. That's pretty good. Oh, shoot. I don't care who you are. That's funny. Sickening. Sickening, evil bastards. And they want their country back. Remember that. So we'll get after it tomorrow night for prayer meeting Wednesday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks especially to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.